Tonight's special Survivor coverage is sponsored by Invoice2Go. Now, we're going to be dealing with a lot of numbers and a lot of numerical information collected by the tabulator. And that's what you're doing when you are running a small business trying to keep track of your invoicing. But unlike Survivor polling data, that can be frustrating trying to keep up with all of the invoices on nights and weekends, and you're looking for something that you can just save time. As a small business owner, I know that anything could help me in this area, and that's how Invoice2Go helps you, because it's mobile and it's intuitive and it's fast, because you can use Invoice2Go, grab it from the app store, you know it's safe, and you can get your first invoice going in less than 2 minutes. It's that easy and fast, and you can customize it as you see fit to help you stay organized. So it's free to try. Go to Invoice2Go today, create your first 3 invoices absolutely free. It's an offer that you can't and shouldn't refuse for a limited time. You'll get 50% off Invoice2Go for an entire year. Get Invoice2Go for as little as $9.99 a year using the promo code ROB. So to redeem this offer, download Invoice2Go from the App Store from your iPhone, iPad, or Android device, or visit Invoice2Go.com. That's Invoice, the number 2, Go.com, and use the promo code ROB to get Invoice2Go for as little as $9.99 a year. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who got his poll up for all 30 seasons of Survivor and is ready to share it with you here tonight. I am Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our pre-Survivor Cambodia Night Eve ranking of all 30 seasons of Survivor. For the last 2 weeks, you guys have been creating your own 30-season rankings and submitting them, and they have been all put together and tabulated by this man. Here he is, the tabulator, Kurt Clark. Kurt, how are you?
I am amazing. This was fun to do, so I'm glad to be back.
Good. And Kurt, this is such symmetry, such great bookends, because the night before the finale of Survivor Worlds Apart, you and I got together and went through your polling data. And then here we are, the night before Survivor Cambodia, here we are again.
Yeah, it's symmetry. It's kismet. It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. Very excited. And also here with me is a man that 24 hours from now will begin his duties as Survivor Know-It-All when we discuss the first person kicked off of Survivor and everything that happens in the 90-minute premiere of Survivor Cambodia at 9:45 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. Here is the great Josh Wiggler and co-author of The Evolution of Strategy.
Hi, Rob. I'm really still upset about what you said about your poll.
What? Yeah?
This is just gross.
Yeah?
I've dealt with your poll for 30 seasons already.
P-O-L-L.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Josh, congratulations to you, my friend. Today, we posted the final chapters of The Evolution of Strategy. All 30 chapters have now been posted. Josh and I have completed our rewatch of Survivor, which took us just a shade over 14 months to do.
Oh, my God. Yeah, someone on the Survivor Reddit today. Did you see this, Rob? Somebody on the Survivor Reddit today calculated how long it would take you to listen to every single chapter of The Evolution of Strategy.
How long would that be?
12.7 days.
So just a shade longer than I was actually on Survivor in season 8.
That's incredible.
So what I could have just started listening to chapter 1 of The Evolution of Strategy. And then right before I got to the end, I could get voted out.
Oh, my God. That's way too much of my life and your lives, all of your lives. You guys are crazy. You're psychos if you listen to it.
All right. Well, we've posted all 30 chapters. They're all up at evolutionstrategy.com. You could hear chapter 1 for free. But we're going to talk about all 30 seasons of Survivor tonight, because Kurt constructed this fantastic poll. A bunch of you guys voted in. I believe this is probably the biggest undertaking of its kind in terms of having people rank all of the seasons, and we will walk away from this with the definitive 30-season rankings, at least according to the listeners and community of Rob Has a Podcast. Kurt, how many people submit ballots for this?
We had just over 2,700 people submit ballots. There were a couple people who did try to, against all reason, go in and vote multiple times for this. So they actually took the time to rank things. Not too many people, though, and not, again, enough to where it actually skewed the results.
And you cleaned out those results? We're not counting those?
Correct. Your poll is clean.
Thank you. Oh, God, appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Oh,
and so, wow, 2,700 ballots cast for this. And just if you're listening to the podcast version of this or the video version of this, I guess, what you had to do was go through and rank every single season. Like when we did different things in the past, like rank the top 20 all-time players, what did we do, Kurt? Did we make people rank 20? Or we made them rank 10, I think.
I believe we had let them do the top 10. Because then we counted down the top 20, there were people who were upset we did not allow them to rank 20.
So we will get a real number here in terms of the average position for each of these seasons. We will come away with a definitive worst season, second worst season, definitive best season, top five, baby, all the way through. And so we are going to be counting those down here for you guys tonight. So that's all coming up here. And again, we're setting the stage for tomorrow night when Josh and I are going to be live after the Survivor episode. And then once we get through with that, I will turn my attention back to Big Brother and I will be hosting live with all of our Big Brother live feed correspondents at 12:30 a.m. Eastern, our Big Brother 17 finale recap. And then Thursday, so much to do because we've got the first person kicked off of Survivor. Going to talk to them. Going to talk to the winner, second runner-up, and first runner-up of Big Brother. Going to have Jenna Lewis here in the studio. Kurt, can you believe that?
I cannot believe that.
Jenna Lewis is coming here on Thursday. Going to talk to her. And then we're also going to do our voicemails with Jessica Leese because it's time to kick off our amazing race of recaps as well this Friday night live. So Jessica is going to join me to get your voicemails on Thursday. So much going on here on Rob Has a Planet and very, very excited. And finally, TEOS is off the deck so we can finally get it to all this other work that we have to do.
Yeah, it's a good thing that that's done and you've got nothing else going on, Rob, that you can actually take a breather.
Right, and Josh has been very busy this whole offseason himself because he's been killing it with his work for Parade Magazine with his preseason coverage. You can read all of that at robisawebsite.com/parade, which is a direct link to everything that Josh has written. Josh, how many preseason Survivor articles have you written?
Man, so I wrote one for every player. I wrote one for Jeff Probst, so that's 21. I wrote my 22nd today, which is a first-person account of running Quest for Fire. And if you know anything about me and my abilities as an athlete, you can probably assume it did not go very well. So that was a fun story that I wrote today, and then I've got a couple more that are going to post tomorrow. But yeah, it's been a blast. It's been a long month of recording the Evolution of Strategy and writing about Survivor every other waking second that I had. So I'm definitely locked in right now. Definitely locked into the Survivor thing.
How many words have you written about Survivor this preseason?
Thousands. Thousands.
Hundreds of thousands, probably.
Lots of words. Many, many, many words. They're long reads. If you're looking for a good long Survivor read, this is the place to do it. But if you're looking just for a quick hit thing, this is not your spot. This is a lot of words.
All right, here we go. Kurt, how are we going to go through this? We've got an unusual order tonight.
Yeah. We've got 30 rankings, obviously, to go through. And the way that the results were kind of spit out at me was there's kind of an average ranking where each season fell. Like some seasons, like, averaged out at, like, for instance, 8.33. But that allows you to kind of place them in an order. So what I think we're going to do is we're actually going to start right in the middle. We're going to start at number 16 and work our way down through the 15 least favorite, I'm not going to say worst, least favored seasons of Survivor. So from 16 down to 30.
Josh, you like this? We're going to go down into the abyss first before we come back up.
Oh, I love the abyss. The abyss is my favorite place. I'm very interested in this. This is great.
All right, so we're going to...
Besides, we all know what number 30 is anyway. We can work our way to that.
I don't think we know that definitively.
I feel like I know.
Okay.
So unless you guys got it wrong.
We will see. All right. Hashtag RHAP. Also, Scott St. Pierre is watching the chat room and Twitter. So if you got your stuff that you want to get into the show, your tweets, send them to hashtag RHAP on Twitter. And Scott will let me know when we've got something relevant to what we're talking about. And then also on our YouTube channel at robisawebsite.com/YouTube. And we're kicking off this Survivor season. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, robisawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, Kurt. Give us number 16. By the way, I also put together my own rankings. I did rankings. I'm prepared to share with you guys as well what my rankings are, and I'll post them as well after the fact. I didn't go super crazy. I didn't do like a major deep dive. I probably spent more time on the top 10 than say 10 through 25. I sort of like, there's a lot of stuff that probably could got swapped. And if you've heard my winner rankings on the Evolution of Strategy, these are fluid rankings.
Yeah. How many edits have you made to this list so far, Rob?
I basically did it and I looked at it today and I moved some things around as well. Yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead and, Kurt, why don't you give us number 16?
Okay, let's kick it off with something that's near and dear to all of our hearts and about 12.7 days of Rob's heart. Season 8, All-Stars.
Oh, wow, number 16.
Wow.
Which, that's about right where I had it. I had it at number 17 in my rankings.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of happened right there safely in the middle.
Okay, number 16. Survivor All-Stars. So let me just, I want to make sure that I'm getting this as we go along. I think I'm going to just have a document open on my computer. Josh, All-Stars, does that surprise you for number 16?
I'm a little surprised. I feel like the internet opinion on Survivor All-Stars tends to be kind of thumbs down. I think that a lot of people don't like how negative this season gets. I think a lot of people didn't like how people like you, Rob, and the Colbys of the world and the Lexes, people who were really popular and successful in their first seasons, go out fairly early in All-Stars. And I think that there are a lot of people who didn't love that. So I'm surprised to see it middle of the pack. Frankly, I would have thought to see it even a little bit lower than this. I like All-Stars more than the average bear, the average Papa Bear. But I think that there are people who really dislike this season. So I would have been shocked to see it any higher than this. I'll say that.
All right. There you go. Number 16 is Survivor All-Stars on the board. One down and 29 to go. Kurt, what's number 17 in our polling?
Number 17, not just an actual follow-up to Season 8, but one in our rankings too. Season 9, Vanuatu, finished at number 17.
Okay, Vanuatu at number 17, which I had it at number 19 in my own personal rankings. So right now I'm pretty much seeing things pretty closely as the viewers did. So Vanuatu is a kind of an interesting season. One of the things that I was trying to look at in my own personal rankings, my criteria that I used were, I sort of was thinking about just in terms of like how many episodes are there that if I had to go back, I would come away from it and say, boy, nothing happens in this episode. It's really no, there's no big moment. There is really, it's a level... The level, what's the level three Survivor in my pyramid of level three, level two, level one? How many level three episodes are there? And I feel like there's not a ton going on in the Vanuatu pre-merge. And then I think it gets a lot more exciting once you get all the stuff going on with Chris making his run to the end.
I thought you were going to say when Chad gets drunk on Kava.
Oh, yeah. Major
or when,
highlight.
Or when Sergeant Lee Masters shows his buttocks.
Yes. I mean, it's the season that did coin the term the Lisa Kiefer. So you have some red shirts, I think, early on in that season.
Yeah. But I think going back to that season with you, Rob, I think that even then I got the sense that you weren't like underwhelmed, but you were whelmed. You were thoroughly whelmed by Survivor Vanuatu. I think that I expected you to be maybe a little bit higher on it, that this would have been one of the first surprises of the rewatch when we were doing Evolution of Strategy. And I think that at the time you were just like, oh, it's Vanuatu. It's about what I expected.
Yeah. About what I expected. I mean, it's not a season that I am longing to go back and watch. In addition to how many...
Are you longing to go back and watch any of them?
Probably not. But in addition to how many dud episodes are there in a season, I'm also looking at it in terms of strategic gameplay and unpredictability in characters. Those are really the criteria that I'm looking at to rate these seasons. And I feel like that certainly Vanuatu gets a little unpredictable towards the end. There's some characters, but not a fantastic character season. And then ultimately, you know, it's an exciting finish and some really strong play from Chris.
You love Julie Berry.
And I do love Julie Berry. I think she's a very underrated player. Yeah. All right. Kurt, did you submit your own rankings?
I actually did not. I didn't want that to skew anything.
To cloud the judgment.
Yeah. But no, Vanuatu would have been further down for me.
Okay.
Personally.
Kurt did not love Survivor Vanuatu. All right, Kurt, what is number 18 on the list?
Okay, and this is one that did surprise me. This is one that I would have been much, much higher for me. And number 18, season 4, Marquesas.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Number
Not
18.
A lot of love for the Marquesa.
Yeah.
It's low.
Now, this is a season, Kurt, that you would have had much higher.
I personally would have, just because I think it was the one of the first seasons where you saw kind of major shifts and shuffles in the tribes. I think more so than you necessarily saw in Africa. You saw the premier, Boss and Rob. You had Kathy in this. Maybe, I don't know if people ranked it low because they weren't a fan of the winner. Maybe that's how some people chose to submit their rankings. But I thought there was a lot that happened in this that kind of kept things interesting.
Yeah, for me, I actually kind of had it lower. I actually had it at 21 in my ultimate rankings.
That is the epitome of a terrible ranking of Survivor Marquesas.
For me, I feel like while there are some great moments in that season, I do think that there are at least a couple of dud episodes.
You
I
hate mean, what, Gabriel Cade so much that you knocked it down that
Not
low.
A big Gabriel Cade fan in terms of a character, but in terms of the actual episodes, I mean, once John Carroll goes, it's sort of a foregone conclusion, and the next three episodes are sort of boring boots between Zoe and Tammy and the general. All those are sort of like, there's like a real big lull, I think, of 3 weeks following the fall of John Carroll that I think are not super exciting in terms of the game. And then you have sort of an exciting finish towards the end. So I feel like I have 21 for Marquesas. I do feel like that was one of those seasons where I struggled to get through that post-merge.
21 on Marquesas. I know that Jeff Probst doesn't love this season. I know that Jeff Probst did one of his rankings once upon a time, and he had Marquesas very low. I don't know. I wouldn't expect to see Marquesas in the top 10 or anything like that, but this feels a little low for Marquesas for me. I think Marquesas was a huge game-changer season. You know, the fall of the Row 2-4, I think it's a pivotal moment in Survivor history. It's the first time we see that the majority can really get overturned when a new majority is created. I said it at the time. We recorded that chapter. I thought that it kind of paved the way for a lot of the way that you played, Rob. So I think that Marquesas, maybe it doesn't have to be your favorite season or anything like that, but I think you got to salute the Marquesa. I think a lot of important stuff in Survivor history happens there.
Oh, it certainly does. And I kind of feel like it's difficult to do these rankings, especially as we went back and watched all 30 of these seasons. Like even, you know, I don't want to say all 30, but for the most part, like 27, 28 seasons, I feel like there are very enjoyable to rewatch. So I don't feel like that it is a bad season, but I feel like that there's a lot of stuff that I feel like I would much rather sooner go back and look at again.
Yeah.
So sad news for Marquesas. It's not that sad. I'm number 18.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Not terrible.
It's good news. It's good news. I actually had it lower. I moved it up. That was one of the tweaks that I made in my rankings.
Unbelievable. This is a bad start.
Brought it back up.
Well, should we continue on to number 19?
Yes.
Number 19. And so far we've had all, you know, old school Survivor. We continue with that trend. Season 3, Africa, number 19.
Ooh, Africa at 19. I actually had that lower in my rankings. I actually had Africa at 26, Josh.
Wow, low on Africa.
I was low on Africa. I really felt like that was another one of the seasons that I struggled to get through on the rewatch in terms of like, once we start to get to after the boot of Brandon, I feel like that season really starts to drag. I mean, I remember in talking through it, and again, what I look for in a Survivor season might be different than what your mileage may vary, but there's like points, there's like a couple episodes where there's like no game talk whatsoever.
Yeah. I think that Africa and Marquesas, they feel like a pair. You know, it feels like wherever Marquesas was going to land, Africa was not going to be far behind. I'm not surprised to see these two together here. I know a lot of people don't love Africa, and I think that that was, you know, we talk about this in the chapter too, you know, this was the feeling at the time. I think that maybe there was a little bit of feeling a little bit like Survivor is just getting a little old. It's a little bit played at this point. I don't think that it has necessarily the same dynamic cast that you get out of Borneo or Australia or anything like that. So I do feel like some Survivor fatigue is setting in around the time that Africa hits. And I think it's not quite as iconic the way that those first two seasons are. So it loses a little bit of the luster there. I'm not surprised to see it where it is right here. I think that this, honestly, it's a little higher than I expected it would be.
Kurt, what's your take on Africa?
Wasn't terribly excited about it. I remember at the time when it aired, a local movie theater that served beer was actually airing seasons of Africa in the large theater, so people would get together and watch it. So it was fun from that perspective, because it was the first time that I actually saw a community forming around Survivor, so it does hold a kind of a nice place in my heart. But at the same time, you're going there, and not a lot's happening necessarily on the screen. When they did the tribe swap pre-merge, and that was the first time that happened, you know, the theater went crazy when that happened. But anything after that, there wasn't a whole lot. I like you, once Brandon went, it was kind of like going through the motions.
You watched Survivor in a movie theater that served beer?
Yeah.
That sounds like paradise.
Yeah.
Was that the name of the theater?
Is it called Bruin View, actually?
It's called Frank and Beans. Is it the same theater where Frank and Brandon watched Out of Africa?
Sadly, no.
That'd be awesome.
Here's a question for Kurt. This is from Nicholas Hartman. Wants to know, does Kurt have data on the number of first place votes? Would be interesting. Kurt, is that the kind of thing you could share with us? How many first place votes for each particular season?
Yes, and I'll actually pull that up for the next ranking.
Okay. All right. Oh, wow. So let's go to now.
It's a bad summer for T-Bird here, for T-Bird to be ranking here at 19.
Okay, Kurt, give us number 20. What is the last Survivor season in the middle era of Survivor rankings?
Well, number 20, if there was any concern that recency bias is pushing more recent seasons to the top, this is kind of proof against that. Season 30, Worlds Apart, finished at number 20.
Wow.
And that is exactly where I had it in my rankings. Yeah. We're in lockstep, me and the rankers.
And to answer Nicholas's question, four people voted Worlds Apart as number one.
Were those people in the Dirty 30?
They very well could have been.
Can we track the IP addresses for it? Was Dan Foley one of those people, Josh?
No.
Whereas 64 people had it in last place.
Did the rankings hold, Josh?
They were hollow.
Yes.
They will not stay. Wow. Worlds Apart at 20. I feel good with this. I feel good. I think that this is one of those seasons where it's like not a Kageyan. You walked away from Kageyan pretty immediately feeling like this is top tier Survivor. This was an excellent season. This was incredible. I think that with Worlds Apart, I don't know if things are going to change the further away we get from it. I think we're still too close to it. For me, I didn't love it. I didn't love it while I was on. It would be pretty low for me. 20 would actually probably be a little high for me in Worlds Apart, but I would not expect it to be much higher than this. I'm pretty happy with it here at 20.
I mean, just in terms of my own criteria of how many episodes, if you went back and said, okay, this episode's a total dud, this one's a total dud, I don't really think that there are any episodes. Probably the only one that I think is a really lousy episode in that season is that one that we did the live know-it-alls for, where Nina gets voted out. I mean, that's really the only episode where nothing is really going on, at least strategically. I mean, you have a lot of excitement down the stretch, and you have a lot of interesting characters, and there's some intrigue, and especially if you don't know how it's going to play out, there's a lot of excitement about Mike coming down the wire. So I think that there is definitely some appeal to Worlds Apart on a rewatch.
Yeah. No, Mike's a terrific winner. You know, it ends really well. I think it's got a really happy ending. There's a lot of darkness you got to get to that happy ending.
Yeah. Kurt, anything else on Worlds Apart?
No, I think that's about it.
Are you ready to move on to the final trilogy, 21 through 30? Here we go. The march towards the worst season of Survivor.
At number 21, we've got season 11, Guatemala.
Guatemala!
Yeah, man. That's way too low, man.
Josh, can you believe
it? You scumbags, man.
Guatemala. Now, is Guatemala the 21st best season of Survivor, Josh?
Where is it on yours? I really want to know. That's what I want to just skip to the spoilers. I want to know where you had this.
I had it at a balmy 13 in my ranking.
Wow! I love it. Mission accomplished. If Guatemala was your 13th best Survivor season, Rob, then I can walk away happy.
Yeah.
I feel like you only rank Survivor Guatemala this low if you haven't seen it in a long time or if you've never seen it.
I think it's one of those seasons. I do think that there's a couple of, red shirt type episodes, like, between your Morgans and your Briannas and a couple of people early on in the season. But once you get to the merge, everybody is at least a pretty interesting character. And even though there's a little bit of a pagonging going on, there's a lot happening there in the post-merge game. Not the best strategic season of all time, but I think at least everybody is interesting after a certain point.
Eight people had Survivor Guatemala ranked first. There were 108 people who agreed with you, Rob, and put it at number 13.
Okay.
Wow. Boom. Rob, you're really in line with a lot of these people.
Yeah, well, that's why they like this show, because I give the people what they want.
You reflect what they're thinking.
They're like, we're so there.
That really is a great post-merge cast on Guatemala. The people that are left once you merge, it's just fantastic.
All right. So, Kurt, number 21 for Survivor Guatemala. What's your take on Guatemala, Kurt?
I'm guilty of only having watched each season once when it originally aired. I mean, I was there from the very beginning, but I've never gone back and actually rewatched the season. It's not something I personally enjoy. For me, the enjoyment is kind of, it's more the mystery aspect, trying to figure out who gets, you know, kind of like who gets taken out next.
Kurt.
Yes.
Brianna.
And so I do think it did finish. I probably would have had it maybe a little bit higher, but I think, you know, it's fresh in your guys' mind. I think that's probably why you're feeling that it got slighted.
I think it suffers from some bad PR. I think we need, Rob has a PR firm to come in and really hype up Guatemala. I think we need some returnees from Guatemala.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to have like one person come back, at least one of these people. Yeah.
Stephanie LaGrosa.
Well, could we get Judd to come back with that?
Damn, that'd be great.
That'd be good.
That'd be damn good, man. Or Brian Corridan, give him a second chance, right?
Get those rankings up to platinum.
Yeah.
Or
Brian Corridan.
Amy O'Hara, if she would come in and say, if you don't rank my season higher, I will beat you down.
I know that Lynn Spillman's been trying to reach Gary Hawkins, but he's...
Nobody can find him.
No known contact info for that guy.
Let's take a comment on Guatemala. This is from Michael GM. Shocked. Guatemala is 21. I liked it a lot. I think it was a really good season. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not shocked. This is about right. I mean, just consensus-wise, I think that you hit something, Kurt. I think it's really fresh for Rob and I, and fresh for a few people who had done the rewatch recently. But Guatemala's kind of forgotten season. This is about where those forgotten seasons are going to land.
All right, Kurt, 22.
That was number 22, season 29, San Juan del Sur.
Ooh, Josh, San Juan, your precious San Juan del Sur at number 22.
I'm okay
22.
With that. That's fine.
Yeah. Another season that I think suffering from some bad PR.
Yeah. You like this more than Worlds Apart, Rob. Make it known. Make it public.
Josh, I had San Juan del Sur. You're not going to believe this. I had it at number 15 in my rankings, which is technically top half, baby.
Wow. 15 for San Juan del Sur.
Yep.
Can you talk about that a little bit for people who don't know about your reawakened appreciation for San Juan del Sur? What do you love about this season now that you're a little bit further away from when it first aired?
Well, Survivor San Juan del Sur, I think, has a really excellent, exciting post-merge game. And I think that really kicks into high gear after the Julie McGee quit. You have the battle between Josh and Jeremy. And then ultimately, once Jeremy gets blindsided, Natalie's game, I think, is really exciting. I think really holds up on a rewatch. The pre-merge is not great, I gotta be honest, you know, but I think that there's enough there in the post-merge. I don't think that there's any really brutal pre-merge episode. I mean, I think you get a lot out of the, you know, there's the stuff going on with John Rocker. There's probably like one or two episodes in the pre-merge that are really a bit of a drag. But I think all in all, I don't think that there's a bad episode in the post-merge.
Great post-merge.
Really, really strong post-merge, Kurt.
Yeah, I would have had San Juan del Sur a lot higher. I personally liked it, and probably because of the post-merge, but I'm not surprised where it landed, just given how critically unacclaimed it seems to be with the viewing public.
Yeah,
with the casuals.
Got some negative PR. I'm not sure exactly where it went wrong. Maybe because it followed Cagayan and it had a slow start to the season, but I think... All in all, I think it also suffered from, at the end of the season, you know, Jeff was like talking about season 30 already, but season 29, I think, is a pretty strong season of Survivor. Definitely worth a rewatch.
Jeff was very publicly thumbs down. Niche, niche on San Juan del Sur.
Niche, mish?
Niche. But?
But, Josh, could you just speak to the characters also in San Juan del Sur?
They're incredible. Drew Christie. The Drew Christie boot episode is one of the great pre-merge episodes of all time. He's basically a badass. It's a total meltdown. It's fantastic. I think that there's a lot of great people there. I love me some Dale Wentworth. I think Dale Wentworth is underrated and underlooked. I think there's some great characters in the late game, too. You know I'm a nail male. Big fan of Keith. Can't wait to see Keith coming back. And I love Jeremy. I just think that the cast of the season is fantastic. And Natalie Anderson, tremendous, tremendous, tremendous winner. I think that she's a really incredible winner. I think that she's an elite winner of Survivor, and I hope that that really gets appreciated in the years to come. I think that the game that she played in San Juan del Sur is one of the best winning games we've ever seen on Survivor.
Love you, Bay.
Love you, Bay.
Yeah, Missy was very happy with the kind words for season 29.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so there is San Juan del Sur. So we've knocked out the two most recent seasons of the show. both bottom half seasons. So I hope that the fan base is really still clamoring for more Survivor.
Yeah. I feel like these Nicaragua seasons are probably all landing somewhere around this area we're in.
Is Nicaragua cursed, Josh? Should they not do any more seasons in Nicaragua?
We're out. We're out on Nicaragua. No more Nicaragua. All right. We did enough.
One San Juan del Sur comment before we move on to number 23. Michelle Grudlin, San Juan del Sur is way too low. Post-merge is excellent. Pre-merge is fun when you know that the back-to-back Josh and Jeremy boots are coming.
Yeah, I think that this is a great season on the rewatch. I think that this is one of the best seasons to rewatch because I think that you are led to believe that something really huge and epic is going to happen between Josh and Jeremy, and then they're just both knocked out immediately, and it's kind of like, that's not what I expected to have happen. Who's going to win this thing now? So I think that is that's a really great point, and I see some people in the chat room, too, who are talking about some of the funny call-outs that you made during the podcasting for San Juan del Sur, and I've said this to you before, Rob, that I think that the podcasting on RHAP for San Juan del Sur was top-notch. And I think that that is another big reason why I love this season is because I think it was one of my favorite years of the podcast.
Shut your mouth, homie G.
I'm not talking to you, Smarty Poo.
I'm a meat collector.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, see? All, right. All so good.
Kurt.
Just stick to the plan. Let's move on to 23.
Number 23,
season 17, Gabon.
Gabon. All right, this is going to be
Rob,
higher
is it
than
a bummer that this isn't season 30 for you?
No, well, I actually had it at number season 29. 29 for Gabon. How about that?
Do not have a Gaboner.
Did not have one for Gabon. I know some people love Gabon, and maybe it was just me, and maybe one day I'll go back and enjoy it. But you know what? For me, Gabon on the rewatch that we did was more of a first watch for me. I had never really seen it all the way through, and I came in with probably some expectations, and I kind of walked away from it like, this was it? This was what everybody was going was telling me what I was really going to like? I didn't even like that Gabon season.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't see the comedy in it, Rob.
Again, I watch a much funnier show if
Frasier.
I want comedy.
You're a Frasier man.
Go watch Frasier reruns.
Yeah, in the alternate universe. That's what you and Akiva are podcasting.
yes, with Kevin Smith. Yeah. We're going to talk about Frasier. But that being said, I mean, I feel like that there is not an amazing level of gameplay going on here in Gabon. I think that there are characters that there that are exciting. But all in all, I just kind of felt like, where is this going? Where's this going, Gabon?
Going nowhere fast, and that's the beauty.
We're circling the drain here in Gabon.
Off the rails. Yeah. It's an off the rails season. It's what Mike Bloom and I like to talk about this season as one of the train wreck seasons of Survivor. It's an absolute cluster F. It's ridiculous. You said it before that there isn't a top 30 player in sight in Gabon. I think that's accurate, and I think that that's kind of wonderful. I think it's rare to have that in a given Survivor season. And you probably don't even have a top 50 player out there in Gabon. And I think that's fun. I like that.
And I love Randy. And Corinne's a lot of fun, too. But I did not have a lot of love for Gabon.
What about Dan Kay?
Yeah, what about him?
My favorite.
Yeah. All right. Kurt, what did you think of Gabon?
Yeah, Randy was a fun character. Corinne was a fun character. And, you know, so from a good versus evil perspective, it was fun to see them get their comeuppance in the context of the show. But then again, they're also like, you know, two of the best friends of the podcast now, and they're great people. Apart from those moments, it really ended with a fizzle for me.
Yeah, so bit of a bummer. Sorry, this season was elephant dung for all of you.
Yeah.
Number 23 in the ranks. All right, Kurt, what's 24?
At number 24... Season 26, Karamoan.
Oh, okay. Boy. All right. I actually had Karamoan higher. I had it at 16 in my rankings.
Wow. You love Cool Mellow.
I just think it's much like Survivor San Juan del Sur. It's a season that I think has a very exciting post-merge game. I think that the pre-merge is bad. The pre-merge is bad, but I think that the post-merge is pretty exciting. Once you hit the merge in that season, there's not a bad episode, but the first few episodes are very, there's real, like the first episode I think is pretty good, but then you get into a lot of stuff with Shamar, and I probably would drop it at, you know, if I had to do it over again, I might drop this another spot or two, but that second half of the season is really, really strong. I will say, especially after the, once you get through the Brandon Hance tribe swap on the rewatch, you're like, okay, finally, let's get down to it. Those next two episodes are really a slog to get through, where you have the vote off of Matt Bischoff and then ultimately Julia. Those are probably, might be the least interesting episodes in the whole season.
The whole series?
In the season. It's the season.
In the whole series, I'm saying.
Oh, wow. Terrible, okay.
It's a terrible episode.
Yeah. Really nothing going on there. Nothing to see here.
Kind of an unforgivably dreadful pre-merge in Caramoan. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that that have been unpacked over the years. Kurt, I'd love to know how many people put Caramoan last, because I would bet a significant amount.
Well, I was just going to break in and say one person rated it first.
Yeah.
I could probably track down through IP address the one person if we want to actually stage an intervention.
Wow, so Mr. Robot of you.
Yeah.
Was it Cochran?
Probably. 121 people ranked it last, but you had like 166 people ranking at 29th. It was pretty solidly in the triple digits for at least the bottom 10, bottom five.
Yeah. I think if I had to do it over again.
In Holmes terms, I think a lot of people would malign this season.
Yeah, if I did it over again, I think I probably would have had it around like 18 or 19 in my rankings.
Yeah, I think this is a bottom five season for me.
Yeah. But it's just, it's not a good first half, but the second half I think is really strong. And there's a lot of seasons that don't have a good first half or second half. So I have to say that, are we splitting hairs? What are we doing?
Unforgivably bad first half.
All right. So, Kurt, what is number 25?
At number 25, you have season 23, South Pacific.
Oh, the two Cochran seasons back to back.
Oh, man.
One person rated it first. It can't be Cochran because he already rated Caramoan first.
Okay. So number 25 for South Pacific, which, Josh, I had it number 18 in my rankings. I really enjoyed South Pacific on the rewatch.
Yeah, I used to, whenever anyone would ask me, what is your least favorite season of Survivor? I really didn't have a good answer. I'd just kind of be like, I don't know, South Pacific. It's got Redemption Island. It's got two people back who really have no connection to each other in Coach and Ozzy. It's got the really awkward, weird religious stuff going on that's a little dark at times. I'm not a huge fan of the Brandon Hance of it all. But on the rewatch, turned out to be nice. I thought it was compelling. I thought it was really compelling. I think that the cast is better than remembered. I think especially coming off of Redemption Island, which was a season that I used to defend a decent amount. Coming off of watching that season, then going from there into South Pacific, for me, the uptick in quality is astonishing, really noticeable. You said 18 is where you have it, Rob?
I had it at 18.
I don't think you could have it too much higher than that. I can't imagine having it much higher than that. But that sounds about right to me. But I'm not surprised to see it where it lands. I think that for a lot of people, you put Redemption Island on any given season, I think that it's gonna affect the rankings. I don't know where we'll get with Blood versus Water, because that's the season where a lot of people, I think, feel like Redemption Island was done right. But I think for South Pacific, I think that cloud hangs very heavily over it, and I do think that there's still a little bit of the negativity that I don't know if people were able to move away from and look through and see some of the funny stuff, like Stacey Powell, Blam.
Got
good Blam. Stuff.
Chuck E. Cheese, yeah.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fun characters that are in that season, of course, you know, in the pre-merge that we forget about, like the great Papa Bear.
Dawn!
who can forget him?
Dawn!
Yeah, so there's some fun to be had there. The Cochran thing is a huge moment in that season. The pagonging goes very quick after that. They get it done in a couple of double episodes, you know, before you blink. Jim Rice, Ozzy, Keith, Whitney, Dawn, they're all gone. And
I
then,
think it's the most efficient pagonging ever.
Yeah, they've got five people gone in, I think, basically the next three episodes.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's great.
So they do a really good job with that. And then I just think that the thing that was very fascinating to me was sort of like, you know where it's going with Brandon Hance. It was a little bit sort of like the prequel to like seeing where it's going. And it's like, oh, he was a really nice kid. And they really did a number on him. And then the coach thing I found to be especially fascinating in terms of how coach really tried to leverage his religious beliefs in that season. And I thought that was really interesting on the rewatch.
Yeah. Darth Vader.
Yeah. All right. So that's number 25 in the rankings, headed towards the bottom five. This is from this person. Siraj says, LOL, I ranked it first.
Ranked South Pacific first. That's the one.
Okay.
We found our one. We found Siraj. Our one.
Yeah.
I respect that.
All right. And then also we have from Michael, who says, South Pacific, similar to San Juan del Sur, in that all of the religious manipulation is less disturbing on a rewatch when you know that Coach is a Lahu Zahir.
I still think it's really disturbing.
Oh, but
it's,
yeah, we get into that. We talk at length about what's going on there with Coach and Brandon Hance.
Yeah, dark AF, as the kids would say. But I like it. I think it's interesting.
Very interesting. All right, Kurt, bottom five, baby.
Yeah, do you want to lock in now what you think number 30 is going to be, or just want to keep on climbing down the charts?
I mean, I've got my rankings. I'll let you know where we what we hit. But it's interesting because I've already got, you know, two of my bottom five baby seasons have already been crossed off in Africa and Gabon.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So
what do you have against
here,
Africa, Rob?
That it was boring.
Wow. Two bad seasons.
Yeah. All right. Here we go.
Okay. Number 26 is Fiji, season 14.
Fiji. Okay. I was in the ballpark with Fiji. Yeah. I had it at 25 in my ranking, so I'm right there. But I actually did enjoy Fiji when we talked about it, Josh.
Yeah. Well, I think if we were ranking Evolution of Strategy chapters, I think Fiji could be a top 10 contender.
Yeah,
I think that was a great chapter of the audiobook. As far as the season goes, not a popular season. I think that it suffers from that same thing of Guatemala. It's just not a season that's remembered very much. I don't think that people think about Fiji very often. I know that there are a lot of Fiji loyalists out there. I salute you guys. You guys are terrific. I don't think that it has the same upside that Guatemala has. I think that the cast is weaker. I think that, you know, there's the Lilianas of the world. Maybe three of you people out there know who Liliana is. You know, it's a cast filled with a lot of red shirts, which is something that we start to really get into, I think, around Cook Islands. Mm-hmm. And I think it's real bad in Fiji. And I think that there's interesting stuff that goes on in Fiji. We've got terrific characters. We've got Yao Man. We've got Earl. We've got the Dreams car deal. So there's great stuff in this season. But I can understand why it would be a bottom season for the RHAP rankings. I think it's a forgotten season. And I think that even when you remember it, there's good stuff in there, but it's a lot of, you know, whatever stuff as well.
Yeah, that pre-merge is rough with the heaven and hell twist. And I have to say, thank goodness for Rocky, because at least he brought some drama.
Hit the day!
He was the best kicker in that first half of the season. And then I kind of feel like you have almost like a Gabon-esque about, you know, crowd in the post-merge game, but you have some cream at the top that you don't have in Gabon in Earl and Yao Man.
Yeah, no, they're great.
So
yeah, I mean, like, considering that, you know, there are 2,700 ballots submitted, you had only around 100 people who even had Fiji in their top 10.
Okay.
So it pretty much fell towards the middle third and bottom third.
Yeah. I think that there is some fun to be had there. That I can't say there isn't necessarily every season, but I definitely, you know, I was pretty close with this ranking. I had it within one spot.
I see you in the chat room, Brian Gold, who says Earl is the best player of all time. I know a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people love Earl Cole.
Okay. What's not great to like?
Great winner.
Yeah.
All right.
This is not a great poker face on that guy. Fantastic dancer.
What a poker face. All right, let's get to our bottom four, baby, number 27.
Number 27, we have Nicaragua, season 21.
Ooh, Nicaragua, number 27. I had Nicaragua higher. I had it at 23 in my rankings.
You got in the right third. You got in the ballpark.
Okay, Nicaragua, Josh.
Yeah, the Survivor season, Survivor Nicaragua. Previously known as Mr. Farty. Yeah. This is a pretty Mr. Farty ranking for Nicaragua.
I think Nicaragua is another season that has some bad PR. Number one, it's coming off of Heroes versus Villains. That's its biggest problem.
Tough spot.
Also, I believe is that a 20-person season as well?
I think it's 18.
Is it?
I don't know off the top of my head.
It's a big season. And then you also, of course, you have a couple of people that are, you know, somewhat forgettable between your Alina and your Eve and, you know, a couple of people in that, your Kelly Bruno.
Actually, yeah. How can you hate the dirt squirrel?
I love the dirt squirrel.
So you have a couple of, not super memorable characters. And then I think that it starts to really get going around the merge and things are, you know, starting to be cooking between you have a big blind side with Brenda and then you have the quitters.
Aren't you surprised, though, to see a season with Spencer Bledsoe and Malcolm Freeberg ranked this low?
In the future. Yeah, it is a little bit surprising.
Pretty low.
But that being said, I did enjoy Nicaragua more than I thought I would as well on the rewatch.
I think Nicaragua is thought of by a lot of people as the worst season of Survivor.
How many people have that at number 30?
Yeah.
There were 249 people who had it last compared to four people who had it first.
Yeah.
four people had it first. So I do think that there are some good moments. I really feel like the highest high of that season is like right after the merge. There's Alina, I believe, then Marty, and then Brenda episodes. All boom, boom, boom. I think that those are probably the high points in that season. And I have to say, even Nayanka, in terms of television, I think she was pretty good before the inevitable quit.
Yeah, I think that the double quits McGee, I think that that's really, you know, that really sours a lot of people on Nicaragua. But I think that, you know, I think it's less about the quit itself. And I think that it's more the fact that it just derails the momentum of the season at that point.
There was something going on and then ultimately not. So that is number 27 in your rankings. All right, here we go. Bottom three, baby.
Bottom three, number 28, season 5, Thailand.
Thailand. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I can F with that. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
By the way,
I have Thailand exactly at number 28.
Wow.
So right there.
Yeah, Thailand's bottom five for me, too.
Yeah, Thailand, it's not a super fun season. I know that, you know, Thailand probably has some nostalgia for some people in terms of, you know, a time and a place. And that's why you kind of remember it fondly. But in terms of going back and watching some of these episodes, there are definitely some dog episodes in the pre-merge. And there's some dog episodes in the post-merge here with Thailand. I think it's a tough season to get through a rewatch of.
Let's not mention dogs in Thailand.
That's true. That's fair. Brian Heidick.
Let's shoot down that dog talk right now.
Yes, thank you, Josh.
He's not going to like that. And then there's also some unpleasant things between the grind gate, between some of the stuff with Brian and Clay as you get down the home stretch. So overall, I did not find Thailand to be a particularly enjoyable rewatch. And then ultimately, I think that like part of the attraction for me was Brian Heidick and watching his game. But I'm not sure necessarily. I mean, he was sort of the person who was the first to do what he did. But I kind of feel like in terms of impressiveness, I'm not sure in modern day Survivor if it holds.
Yeah, Mr. Freeze, I've never been like over the moon impressed with. I know a lot of people call Brian Heidick the greatest of all time. I just don't see it. I really don't. And I didn't see it on the rewatch. I've never really seen it. And I think that it's, you know, this season, you touched on this, Rob. I think it's the opposite of South Pacific and it's Pagonging. I think this is like the worst Pagonging ever. It's such a long stretch of nobody but Sukjai people getting burned for so long. That's tough. It's tough to handle.
Yeah, I think after Gandia, I think it's all just Sukjai people down up until the final five. And it's also a thing where you have that real exciting moment with Sheehan with the fake merge. But I think that really comes at the expense of the season, where had Sheehan flipped to Chewy gone at that point in time, I think that would have really been an inciting incident and really would have made for a few more exciting episodes instead of Sheehan just getting picked off and then the rest of her tribe then getting picked off.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been at least a few more interesting episodes. So I get it. I get it, Thailand at 28.
Yeah. A lot of people, I know a lot of people, maybe it's a very vocal minority of people who really do like Survivor Thailand, but it's never done it for me.
All right. Here's a question maybe that we can help explain to people. This is from Rachel, who wants to know, what do Rob and Josh mean by red shirts? Josh, do you want to take this?
Yeah, it's weird that a lot of people in Survivor just wear red shirts. It's just it's a wardrobe choice that gets made for them. No, it's a Star Trek term. If you're on Star Trek and you're just a random dude who's wearing a red shirt, you're probably about to get bounced. Yeah. You're probably going to get beamed up to that great Enterprise in the sky.
Yeah, because a lot of times, you know, Kirk and Spock and McCoy and then like some random guy will go explore a planet. And then whatever dangerous thing on that planet isn't going to kill Kirk or Spock or McCoy because they're sort of like the main people on the show. But they will inevitably just kill that random guy in a red shirt that happens to be with them.
Right. And there's a lot of red shirts throughout Survivor history.
Yeah. And so that's what we use as sort of like a code name for people that aren't really super memorable, sort of like a, what's that person's name? Who was that person? That's what we mean when we talk about the red shirts.
Yeah.
All right, Kurt, 2 seasons left here at the bottom. If I had to guess, I feel like it's pretty easy to say what they're going to be, but you never know. Josh, do you have a guess as to what these bottom 2 seasons are going to be?
I think it's going to be Kagyan and no, it's obviously it's One World and Redemption Island. And I'm going to say it's in that order.
All right. So you think what you think 29 is going to be
One World
and 30 is Redemption Island.
That's my call.
OK, Kurt, why don't you give us number 30?
Number 30, the I'm not going to say worst season, I'll say least liked season is Redemption Island season 22.
Yeah, that's what I got too.
Yeah.
I got it at 30 as well. Dirty 30.
By far, 852 people had it as last place compared to number 29, which was One World, 326 people. So you had, by far, this was ranked worst, least liked season ever.
And I got to say, it's a season that gets out of the gate fast. It is a great first episode, I think, of Survivor Redemption Island. I think it's a great first couple of episodes. I think the idea of Rob versus Russell is at least interesting, but then once you lose Russell, and then it's like, what is going on at Zapatera? It's really a very uninteresting tribe without Russell. And then you have everybody who's pretty much moving in lockstep with Boston Rob at Ometepe. Then you get a little bit of a bump with Redemption Island. Matt Elrod comes back. That's a fantastic episode where Matt Elrod gets burned for the second time by Boston Rob. But then that's a long slog of getting rid of that Zapatera tribe.
Yeah, takes a while. And you know me, I'm the world's biggest Steve Wright fan, and even he can't save Zapatera for me.
That's a long slog getting through what I don't even remember what the order is of, you know, of Ralph, Mike Chisel, Julie, the great David Murphy, Steve Wright. That is a lot of time, and it gets into some really ugly stuff with Philip and Steve about the Rice Wars.
Rice Wars!
Hey, Sestanino, what are you talking about? This is the best season of all time.
And I think, yeah, and I think the other piece of it is it is a slog through that pagonging, but then you get to the Ometepe, and even then it's just kind of, you know, coronation. You know, let's just roll out the red carpet for this guy. And for me, my defense of Redemption Island used to be that I think that when you didn't know how it was going to shake out, I thought that the Matt Elrod thing was compelling. You don't know if he's going to come back into the mix and really challenge Boston Rob or not. But once you know the outcome, and really many people just saw it happening, it was happening, it was real. I think that this is for me easily the weakest season of Survivor, especially on a rewatch. It's really tough to get through. There's just not a lot of redeeming qualities about it. It's a masterful game by Boston Rob, but not an easy one to watch.
Yeah. And then even at the point where you get down to the Ometepe 6 and then Andrea gets blindsided and then Grant ultimately gets blindsided and then Andrea comes back into the game and it's like, hey, and still nobody votes with Andrea and they vote her out again. It's a little frustrating down the stretch. And it really comes down to, I think, what your mileage is on Philip. And I think that he gets a little bit grating as you go along. So the consensus number 30, what's the gap between 29 and 30, Kurt?
You know, if you look at like what their average ranking was, taking everybody's scores into account, so One World was ranked at 24.79. It was still, that was the, you know, second lowest average ranking, and Redemption Island was at 25.44. So they were kind of close in terms of how people ranked them on average. But again, just that if you take a look at that last place ranking, you had 800 some people place Redemption Island as number 30, and you had 300 some people place One World at number 30. So, you know, it just wasn't well loved.
Yeah. So here we go. So let's touch on now season 29 in our rankings, which is going to be Survivor One World. Josh, are you surprised that Survivor One World was not viewed as popular by the voters?
No, of course not. Of course not. I'm not surprised. I think, you know, it felt like a foregone conclusion that you got to go Redemption Island and One World as 30 and 29. And anyone who knows me at all from these podcasts or whatever knows that I've got a place in my heart for One World. It was the first season I covered professionally, first season that you and I ever talked about, Rob. I love Kim Sprothlin. I can never remember if it's Spratlin or Sprothlin anymore. So thank you, Tony. And for me, Kim is the GOAT for me. I think that Kim she's my sun in stars as far as Survivor goes. And I love to watch her play, but it's a tough season to watch as well. Not a lot of people who you can root for. I think that there are some silly characters out there that I probably have a fonder feeling for than a lot of Survivor fans do. You know, I'm a Tarzan fan. Rob, I know you're a big Jonas guy. You're a Jonas brother.
I don't know why anybody wouldn't be a big Jonas guy.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Troyzan Probst. I'm just not. And I don't know.
Didn't
I mean,
go wild for season 29?
Not in the Wiggler house. Yeah. So, I mean, I like One World, but I can take no issue whatsoever with it being this far down on the list.
I called it season 29. Season 24, which is now ranked, the season formerly right. known as season 24, is now ranked 20, as
40. Yeah.
29.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. And I do feel like with One World, it's kind of not a great pre-merge. It's really dominated by Colton. His story is unsatisfying. There are some moments coming down the stretch. And I think especially at the point where Troyzan and Jay Byers are going out, I think that that's very exciting. I felt like it was a really good final six episode also in that season where I think it's really masterful how Kim ultimately handles that she's in a final three with herself and Chelsea and Sabrina, and then also in a final three with herself and then with Alicia, and I guess then who else is there? Is it
Cha-Cha?
Cha-Cha and Tarzan. I think the way she plays that, because it's really, we talk about this a lot in the Evolution of Strategy about how they would have been in their best interest to go to rocks in that spot. But Kim ultimately gets them to flip back against Tarzan and tells them how Tarzan's the mastermind. And that's all really, really fun stuff. So that's why I ended up with it at 27 in my rankings.
Yeah. What do you think about what do you think about this idea that Redemption Island is at 30, One World's at 29, Thailand's at 28, and these are seasons that are really dominated by one person? Do you think that that is a contributing factor to the reason why maybe people weren't responding to these seasons?
Yeah, absolutely. We love unpredictability as Survivor watchers.
Yeah.
So I think that certainly speaks to it. All right, Kurt, so the bottom half is done.
Bottom half done.
All right, so now we're going to pick things up going in the opposite direction.
Yes, we left off, we're kind of kicked things off with number 16 All-Stars. Now we're going to work from 15 on up, so let's take a look at number 15.
All right, now we're back in, moving in the right direction, number 15 in the rankings. By the way, on my own personal rankings, if you're following at home, so I have two seasons that I have ranked at number 22 and 24, which we have not talked about yet. I have two seasons that were in my bottom 15, which are in your guys' top 15.
That's fun.
Interesting. Let us know when we get there. This might be it. At number 15, season 19, Samoa.
Samoa. No, I was high on Samoa.
I know. I have a feeling. I know what's going on.
I'm stoked on some Samoa, Josh.
I know what's happening here.
Yeah.
Let's see what's happening here, Josh.
No, I'm not going to say. I don't want to say it. We'll get there when we get there.
Okay. Samoa, I had it at number 8 in my rankings. you guys were so low on it.
Wow.
This is the best season of all time. How can you say
love
it's number 15?
Samoa?
Yeah.
Wow. Number 8 you said or 9?
I had a number 8.
Wow.
I thought Samoa was fascinating to go back and rewatch.
It was fun. You know, I'm not a big Samoa guy, but it was fun to get into the Russell Hance of it all. He's just such a maniac. He really is. And I had a lot of fun talking about his game and, you know, love him or hate him, he is insane television, but it's such the Russell show that's really tough for me. And, you know, we talk about this a lot, like the whole storyline that's happening at Galoo in the pre-merge, AKA what storyline is there? There's no story that's being told. You know, we have these scenes at FOFO and then you shift over to Galoo and just nothing is going on. So it's another one of those seasons where the pre-merge for me is just, it's not great. And I have always said, I think it's wobbliness on the editing. I think it's an overly edited enhances favor season. It's just a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Look. You definitely see a bell curve in terms of the votes. You have a few at the front, you have a few at the back, but there's a huge middle third of the rankings that where the Samoa votes fell.
If you don't think Samoa is a top 10 season of Survivor, you're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
How could you not even like that season?
I do love Shambo.
I mean, you got Shambo there.
You got Brett.
Yeah. Shambo.
Kelly Sharbaugh. Come on.
I mean, that season, I mean, if you're trying to find a dog episode in that season, I think there's probably exactly one episode that's really boring. The vestigial Liz Kim episode that comes after Russell Swan gets voted out and before the merge. And other than that, it's a pretty exciting season in terms of there's something going on in every one of those episodes.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's not a whole lot of time to rewatch a season of Survivor between now and Cambodia. But if you're not familiar with the Monica Padilla game, it is fun to watch her in Samoa, I think, especially her final couple of episodes. I think she's really good.
To be fair, there's probably time to watch one season between now and then. So choose wisely.
Samoa.
Choose wisely. Come on.
Don't pick Samoa.
Come on.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. Number 15 on your list. It was number 8 on mine. Really stoked on some Samoa. All right. Oh. Kurt, what's number 14?
Moving on up. Number 14, we have season 13, Cook Islands.
Okay. Number 13 in its season spot. It's 14 is Cook Islands.
Yes, 14 is Cook Islands.
Right in the ballpark for its season. All right. Cook Islands. I had it at number 24 in my rankings.
Yeah.
I think Cook Islands...
This is one of your bottom ones, okay.
Cook Islands, I think, is remembered more fondly than I think it should be. I think a lot of people like, oh, Cook Islands, you had Yule, Parvati, Ozzy, Penner, Candace, all these great people. And I was stoked to go back and rewatch it. I said, okay. And then there's nothing there. I mean, I think that there is a great 3-episode stretch from the merge up until the boot of Penner. And then after that, it is bollocks. And you know it.
Yeah, we know it.
I do not love Survivor Cook Islands.
Kurt, I'd be interested to know what the spread is on Cook Islands. Because I think, you know, Rob, you said that this is a season that maybe is remembered more fondly than it deserves to be. I feel like Cook Islands being right in the middle, to me, feels like a reflection of people who feel really good about it and people feel really bad about it. I feel like Cook Islands is one of those split seasons where people go in both extremes.
It's still kind of a bell curve, although it's a little bit flatter. You've got like 44 people had it as number 1, 59 had it as number 2, and you kind of stay in the upper double digits through about 9th or 10th place. But then if you look at the bottom, you've got 22 people had it last, 46 had it 29, 63 had it 28th. You still have like solid triple digits in the middle third again. So it wasn't really so much that you had a lot of love and hate for it. You still had quite a few people in the middle third.
I mean, talk about a season with red shirts too. I mean, you have so many people. You have 20 people in that season, and there's just a lot of wasted space and some of it in creative space. But I mean, between Becky, your Becky, Sandra,
Becky's
you know,
third place, Sandra's fourth place,
dead weight. It was they're not adding anything to the season. Becky, Sandra, Rebecca, Stephanie, Brad.
Jenny Guzon Bay?
Jenny Guzon, Don't Love You Bay, because it was not great. Between Cecilia, Christina. It is a season with a lot of wasted roster spots.
But it's also got some great characters like Adam Gentry.
Yeah. Right.
Just kidding. The Billy Garcia episode has to elevate it a little bit.
Billy Garcia episode is good, but there's a lot of stuff in that pre-merge there. It's really hard to keep track of everybody once they have the tribe swap. Again, from the mutiny episode itself is not super exciting after that, after the I-24 start to get on a roll. But once you get to the merge with Yule and he has the idol and he talks to Penner and then Penner doesn't know what to do and Nate gets voted out. Those three episodes are fantastic. Those are great TV. But then once Penner goes, it's a little bit, you know, cut and dry going down that home stretch.
Cut up cat poop?
Yeah, that's good. That's good, but that's a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's two comments.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rob. I think this is higher than I would have it for sure.
Yeah. All right. So sorry about that, Cook Islands people. And again, doesn't mean I don't like them in real life. Just means that there wasn't a lot going on there on the show with them.
Yeah.
That's fair. I could say that.
But it might mean you don't like them in real life.
I like everybody in real life.
That's not true.
That's not true.
Stop. All right, Kurt. Number 13.
Number 13. And actually, I should have pointed this out earlier. There was actually a tie, a dead tie.
What?
Between 13 and 14. So technically, Cook Islands was tied for 13 with this next one.
Which brings it up to its actual roster spot.
Exactly. Season 13 tied in 13th place with this season. Season 10, Palau.
Palau at number 13. Okay.
Palau.
I could see it. I actually had Palau at number 9 in my rankings.
Interesting.
Love Palau.
Palau. Okay. Number 13 for Palau. Josh, what did you like about Palau?
I love Palau. Palau is not a season that I know particularly well. It's for whatever reason, just was not a season that I was really watching while it was on. I was in the thick of college at that time. I was doing other stuff. My stuff was happening outside of Survivor that season. So going back and watching it, I got to basically see a season of Survivor I wasn't at all familiar with. So it was like the first new season of Survivor I'd seen in a long time when I went back and rewatched it. Really love it. I love Tom. I love Ian. The late, great Jen Lyon is so great on the show. I really love her. Katie is ridiculous. I think she's funny. Karen. Love Karen.
Tom, come on.
I don't really love Karen, but there's great characters on there. I think that there's really great characters. I think the decimation of Oolong is a really interesting, unique story. Watching this tribe whittle away is really weird, but sort of lovely. And it's got great people. I think it's got really good characters in Palau, and it's a beautiful location. I think that counts too.
Josh, what would Wanda say about this countdown?
I don't know. I don't want to do a Wanda right now. Don't make me do a Wanda. I just spent 300 hours doing a Wanda. Don't make me do a Wanda.
So I really do like Palau, and I thought it was a very fun season to go back and rewatch. And even though it is a pagonging, it's a pre-merge pagonging, which I think is certainly interesting at the time. And I don't think that there's any episodes in Palau that are really just brutal episodes to go through. Once you get to the merge, also, you have some drama going on with Kobe and how he's causing some problems. And then you have the Janu quit, and you have some intrigue around Stephanie and how long are they going to keep her. And there's an insurrection that Tom has to shoot down where, Greg and Jen and Katie are all trying to take him out at round final 7, and they have to sort of shoot that down. And then there's everything going on with Ian and Katie as well. As you get down to the final 4, there's fire making coming down the stretch. You have Tom, who's a great winner. So I think that there's a lot of excitement going on there in Palau. And that's why I had it in my top 10. You guys have it at 13. No major qualms there for me.
Yeah. No, Palau's good.
It's good. It's fat, but it's good.
It's bad, but it's good. And it does have Wanda Shirk, and she's a prince.
She's great.
She's the best.
And she would enjoy this final countdown before the season is over.
Oh, my God. I don't have it in me, but just imagine me singing Beyonce's countdown in Wanda.
All right. So, Kurt, let's talk about the real number 12. Oh, one Palau comment, Scott Selme. This is from Michael Grudlin, Palau. If we're talking about predictability, isn't this one of the most predictable seasons? I remember having no doubt along the way that Tom was the winner, as great as he was. No, I do think that there was a realistic possibility that Ian was going to be the winner. I think that they're really neck and neck in terms of the season goes. Josh, do you feel like that Palau was overly predictable that Tom is going to win?
No, I don't think so. I think that there were some dark horse contenders there. I think that Greg Carey was a true dark horse. I walked away from my Palau rewatch really impressed with a guy like Greg, who I think had some game. And I think that he was trying to take a shot at Tom. And I think that Tom was clever enough to dodge it. And he was obviously great enough at challenges to dodge it. I don't think that it was so straightforward. And I think that the Ian stuff made it really unpredictable down the stretch. And I think it was a really hard-fought game towards the end. I don't think it was super predictable.
Yeah, and I unlike One World and unlike Redemption Island, where both Rob and Kim sort of like went unscathed during the whole game, that people weren't really coming after them. Like Tom, a couple of times, had to get out of some trouble.
Yeah, to get out of some jams. He almost went to rocks.
Yeah. So it was exciting stuff. All right, Kurt, let's get down to number 12 in the rankings.
Number 12. We are at season 12, Panama.
Panama, number 12 again in its actual season spot. Number 12 is where you guys had it. I had it at 14.
Okay, now I definitely know what's going on here.
Okay. All right. So Panama is here, and a season that definitely has its share of kooky characters over at Kasaya. It's a season that brings us Terry Dietz, who we'll see back in action tomorrow night, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Neat. It's so cool.
Fat Freaking City. Terry's
Fat
back.
Fat Freaking City. But it's Joe Torre hat, I hope.
It's also a season that includes the Lamina tribe, which is one of my least favorites in Survivor history.
If you guys haven't listened to the Evolution of Strategy, it might be worth seeking out the Panama chapter just to hear Rob hate a tribe unlike any tribe I've ever heard him hate.
It's so boring. Lamina, especially Lamina. When Terry goes to Exile Island, Lamina minus Terry is a brutal. Nick and Austin and Ruth Marie and Dan and Misty and, Sally and her niece.
Don't
socks.
You speak ill of Misty Giles.
Yeah.
Love her.
That is a one boring tribe, especially by contrast. The other tribe is so interesting at Kasaya because they have all of those wacky personalities between Shane and Danielle and Courtney and Aris and Sari and Bruce.
Bob Dog.
Yeah, Bob Dog. So that's really an exciting season. Sari plays brilliantly. Shane is exciting. There are not a ton of boring episodes in that post-merge.
Casa del Charmin.
Yeah. No, it's a pretty good pre-merge. There's a lot of excitement that's going on, and it's an exciting post-merge, too.
Kasaya 6 is the best.
Yeah. Kurt, you like Panama?
I do. I would have personally had it higher just in terms of the seasons I enjoyed. This was the season I met Adastoran.
Yes.
And like where I first actually like got involved with the Survivor community. So I personally would have had it higher. But okay. Again, that's just my personal enjoyment. It all averages out.
So, Josh, where do you think? Is this high or low for you, Panama?
I'm happy to see Panama this high. It's probably a little tiny bit high for me, and it's certainly higher than I expected it would go. I didn't think that Panama would go this high. I would have expected to see Panama maybe around the 15, 16, 17 spot. So I guess not much higher. Panama was a season that I really loved. This was a season that hooked me back into Survivor. This is when I got all my college friends watching Survivor, so I have a soft spot for this one as well, the way that Kurt does. I love the Kasaya 6. I'm still so mad at everyone who didn't vote for Shane Powers on the second chance. I think we really screwed that one up. But yeah, I love this season. I think that we're so blessed to have this season in our lives.
Okay. Kurt, let's go to number 11 in the rankings as we approach the top 10.
At number 11, we have season 18, Tokenshin.
Tokenshin's, okay. I had it at 12 in my rankings, so we're right there. It's a season that will bring us Stephen Fishback back to Survivor tomorrow. Yeah. Tokenshin's. We had Coach, got JT, got Tyson. So a lot of excitement there. A lot of returnees from this season as well, Josh.
Yeah, the great Ciara Reed is there.
Yes, Ciara. Of course, you got the great Sandy B.
Bah! I'm pissed that Sandy never got another shot.
We are pissed that she never got another shot. So it's a season that is, you know, pretty much by the books. We don't have a ton of twists in the pre-merge. I think the pre-merge is a little so-so, but I think it's a very exciting post-merge. I mean, Coach definitely brings it in the post-merge, and the way that the Timbira tribe really just screws the pooch is exciting. And then you have a great boot episode for Coach. The finale, I think, is pretty good in the way that JT and Steven get into it at the final tribal council. So that's good. So it's a very fun season.
Spectacular final tribal council with JT. He's so good. He really just tosses Steven directly under the bus. And it's unfortunate for Fishback. That's really bad.
The way Steven Fishback was throwing me under the bus to Gordon Holmes today.
Yeah, so what's going on with you and Fishback? Can we get into this a little bit? What's happening? It seems like it's trouble in paradise.
Yeah, he's really like talking about how it's my, if he almost, he like preemptively saying if he does bad on the season, it's my fault, not his. Wow. Like lost, like I'm losing the game in Cambodia before the game even starts.
We don't like it when mom and dad fight.
Yeah.
We really don't. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, Steven really trying to throw blame on me and Eliza even.
Throwing shade at Eliza?
Yeah.
What did Eliza do?
He says that he's like, but I don't even know these. People think I know people. Rob knows people. Eliza knows people. I don't know people.
Oh, he's getting some of that, the halo effect of the wine and cheese.
Yeah. Mm. He's connected.
The stinky cheese.
But that being said, Tokenshin's very fun season of the show. Kurt, you big Tokenshin's guy?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, Coach, obviously, we talked, was a fun character. You had Tyson in there. Obviously, you can't overlook that. And kind of seeing them think that they had all the control and just watching that topple was, again, fun to see. But it I don't know if it would have been in my top 10. Yeah. It would have been right here, 11 to 15, somewhere for me.
On the downside, though, on Tokenshin's, Josh, you have Joe Dowdle.
Rob loves Joe Dowdle. Joe Dowdle, a bottom 10 survivor for Rob.
In terms of entertainment value, probably.
Right. But you love him because you love everybody in person.
In person, sure. I'm just talking about his character.
Right. Character. Right. Fair enough.
Okay. So there we go. Number 11, Survivor Tokenshin. And here we are, Kurt. Top 10, baby.
Top 10. And your number 22 pick is still in the running, apparently. Is
yeah,
that
my number 22. You guys have,
I know
I
what
have
it. Is.
I have one season at number 22, and you guys have it in the top 10.
I know what it is.
I guess.
You know what it is, Josh?
I know what it is.
Okay. You know what it is. You definitely know what it is?
Yeah, I know exactly what
it is. Josh definitely knows what it is. Okay. Good. All right. So let's talk about number. When we get to it, Josh, you call it out.
Yeah, of course I'm going to call it out because you're wrong.
Okay. All right. Let's go to number 10.
Number 10. We have Survivor Season 2, The Australian Outback.
Here we are. We got it. We just got there. We got there so fast.
Yep. No, I got a number 22, baby.
Yeah, because Rob Cesternino does not care about Classic Survivor.
Yes, that's really the MO on me. I am the guy who does not care about Classic Survivor. Look, I'm talking about if you want to just go by nostalgia, then that's fine. That's fine. You can have Survivor Australia in the top 10. But in terms, and it's probably even higher right now with Jeff Varner and Kimmy Kappenberg coming back. And it's a pretty good pre-merge. It's one of the better pre-merges, probably. But that post-merge is brutal. That is a tough season to get through. It's one of the worst finales of any season as well. There is an hour of that finale where nothing happens. Josh, I feel like that was one of the toughest seasons for me to get through. I'm surprised we finished the Evolution Strategy after going through Australia, because look, the nostalgia is
but
there.
But back then, we were doing like 6-hour chapters. We could handle that.
The nostalgia is there when you go back and watch it. It's great to see everybody, but I'm telling you, once Jeff Varner goes home and you get through with those boots of, you know, whether it's, what is it, Alicia, Nick Brown, and then going, you know.
Then
going,
it swings to Jerry? That's unexpected.
You get a little bump for getting Jerry voted out, but then the game, it shifts away from strategy. We're dealing with the flooding and stuff like that. It is a tough season to get through, and I'm telling you, then that finale is the worst finale of any finale of the show.
Ever. That's the worst Survivor finale.
I think so. I would rather watch any of these other 29 finales again than the Australia 2-hour finale.
You
got to
rank those next. That's the next assignment. look, if you don't want to say Survivor the Australian Outback isn't a top 10 season, that's fine. I'm not going to fight you on that. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think that there are portions of the season that are really difficult to get through. I do think that a big portion of the post-merge is unexciting. I think it's a mistake to stretch the season out to 42 days. There's a reason that only happened once. These people almost got killed out there because they were going to get consumed by wildfire, or their hair was all going to fall out, or they were just going to starve to death. It was very, very depressing and very, very bad. But it's such an iconic season. These are such lovable characters for the most part. It is filled with nostalgia, and I think that you have to respect season two of Survivor. I think if you're not going to call it a top 10 season, you have to put it at top 15. And for you to call it top for 22, that's insane to me. It's insane to have Australia any lower than 15 for me. But I also am very biased. This is my first Survivor season. Australia is my Borneo. I know it's that way for a lot of people out there as well. I don't know if it was more watched than Borneo. I don't think anything was. But it was watched by tons and tons and tons of people. And it's just that pre-merge is so good. Kucha is such a great tribe. It's great, great, great classic Survivor. For me, it's the classic Survivor season. I couldn't see it being outside of top 15. I'd be shocked.
Okay. I think that there's probably about like 5 hours of this season that are tough to get through.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of the boots that I mentioned, and that finale is tough. Again, that's just, it, you know, your mileage may vary. Obviously, it does. But I'm in terms of like what I'm looking for in terms of the hours of the show that are just going to be tough to get through, at least on a rewatch. And there are a lot of really interesting characters that are there. But there's just like that's middle is a slog. And the excitement about Jerry, oh, she's such a villain. It does not hold up. Like, she is not that villainous on the rewatch.
So this season is no Hershey bar for you.
No Hershey bar. Like, she's
going no tilt on Australian Outback.
Believe me, it was exciting when, and nobody was more stoked on Survivor than I was during the Australian Outback. But in terms of where we're ranking, what's come after, I think a lot of it is better than what we were watching at that point.
22, man, that's just low.
I mean, you could bump it up a little bit. I just would like, really, that rewatch that we did, I thought was real tough to get through.
All right. Well, I think Rob as a Planet got this one right. Top 10, baby, is good with me.
All right, Kerr, what's your take on this? Settle this.
I enjoyed it. I still remember that during the Mike Scoopin exit, I was actually at a TV Guide event where Jenna Lewis, Sue Hawk, and Jervis were kind of there mixing, and everyone was watching the show together, and nobody knew what to say when Mike fell in the fire. So this is more that thing. I remember like where I was during key points in the series. I probably would have had it right about number 10.
Okay. Let's take a comment from you guys. And this is where Mark D says, Outback is in my top 10 because of the cast, and it's the season that made me fall in love with Survivor.
Yep.
But yep. Just because that you fell in love with it doesn't mean that it was just you. It was the song that was playing at the right moment at the right time.
Wow. Well, if it wasn't for that season, Rob, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. So, you know, for many of you people, you probably wish that season went away. But for you and me, Rob, it's a big season for me.
Okay. All right. So let's move on now. Inside the top 10, number 9, by the way, the lowest ranked season I have on the board right now is the one I have at number 11. So we're back on. That's probably the biggest one that I am out on a limb on.
I saw that coming a mile away.
Okay.
Son of a bitch.
Number nine.
We have season 27, Blood versus Water.
Number 27, Blood versus Water. At number 9, which I actually had at number 10. So we're pretty close on that one. Blood versus Water, Josh.
Blood versus Water. Yeah, top 10 is really tough for me because all these seasons are amazing, and I go back and forth with Blood versus Water. Like, should it be higher than this? I love that season. I think it's great. The fact that it's in top 10 at all, I think, I don't know if you want to call that recency bias. I mean, are we far enough away from Blood versus Water that you could call this an honest top 10? I think it's a terrific season. I think that one of the great things about Survivor Blood versus Water is there's no reason it should have worked. Everything on paper was working against it, you know, from the fact that it was the fourth Rupert season. Great. You know, we've got Colton coming back. Fantastic. You know, people were worried about the loved one thing. A lot of people don't like it when we do half survivors, half new people. You have Redemption Island in the mix. But all of these things just, it was like this perfect storm of oddities and oddists coming together and creating some survivor magic. It's I adore this season. I think that a big part of that is because it just should not have worked. But it worked fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting season. I don't think there's too many dog episodes or dud episodes. I think you could probably say maybe post-swap it drags a little bit with the cat and Laura B boots back-to-back. But other than that, I think that the post-merge is pretty exciting. You get a double boot where you end up seeing where is it Vetus and Tina go in the double boot?
Yeah, that's right.
A well-timed double boot in terms of the pagonging, and then you pick it up into getting getting rid of Laura Moret and stuff like that. So very exciting stretch. If anything, it's probably another season with kind of a not exciting finale. It's a little bit of intrigue of what's Monica going to do when Tina comes back into the game. Ultimately, she's going to stick with Tyson and Jervis, but I think that it's pretty much a chalk finale.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd agree.
As expected.
But I think even those, that Laura B and Kat episode, those two episodes, those are great Vetus episodes.
Great Vetus episodes.
Very exciting coming into Cambodia. If you were looking back at the tape, that was something you were saying in Evolution and Strategy, Rob, is I would be very afraid of that guy.
That
guy terrifies me.
Very, very, very afraid of Vetus after watching the highlight reel from that.
Yeah, him and that Kat tribal council just...
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah. And then in terms of we also have the Colton quit, but it happens at the beginning of an episode. So it's not super annoying or anything like that. So I get it. I get Blood versus Water being a top 10. Kurt, you have any thoughts on Blood versus Water?
I thought it was interesting that it showed that Redemption Island could work.
Yeah.
When I think everyone prior to that thought, you know, why are they bringing it back? But I think the pre-merge Redemption Islands were kind of highlights of some of those episodes. Candace Cody, et cetera.
Yeah. Post-merge Redemption Island, not super exciting, but it definitely worked for me in the pre-merge.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to number 8.
Number 8, we have season 25, Philippines.
Okay. I had it as number 6, but right there. So Philippines. Josh, why isn't this season higher?
I don't know. I think Philippines might be top 5 baby for me.
Wow. How about that? Philippines.
I love Philippines.
The original season of Survivor Cambodia returnee Abby Maria. It's exciting, Kurt.
The second season for Malcolm.
Yes. Yep. Are you talking about after?
No.
In terms of time traveling Malcolm?
Yeah. Isn't it?
There's a lot of people that aren't going to get these jokes.
That's right.
We're going to get emails.
Great Penner season. Great Mike Scoopin season.
Yeah. It's an exciting season. It's a season that does not have too many dud episodes. I think that this is something that we talk about in the Evolution Strategy as well. Those three tribe seasons, I think it really does help the seasons that have like one disaster tribe. In those three tribe seasons, Matt Singh certainly fit the bill there. And so you had all of that drama going on, and Tandang was the functional, dysfunctional tribe in that season. And then Penner and Kent, that's really good. A couple people that were sort of non-factors in terms of Dawson and Katie and now I'm blanking on who was Medivac'd.
Dana.
Dana.
There is no Dana, only Zool.
Yeah. So I think that, but they weren't really big factors. They were gone pre-merge. I think that you have Carter as well, who you love.
I love Carter.
Yeah. So it's an exciting season. Lisa Welchel was better than remembered. So I really enjoyed Philippines on the rewatch.
Yeah. Wildly unpredictable season. That post-merge is crazy. Really, really great stuff. Really fun to watch Malcolm's first game. I think Denise is a tremendous winner. I really love Denise. There's just so much to love about that season. I think that Philippines was really kind of a big turning point for Survivor. You know, just look at the board right now. You know, you've got Redemption Island and One World and Nicaragua and South Pacific are all 25 or under on this. And that's a really tough stretch of Survivor that we lived through, and we get to Philippines on the other end of it. So It's a really important season, I think, and I think it's a big part of why we're in a really creatively strong period in Survivor right now.
Yeah. Kurt, those were good times in Philippines.
Yeah, it's, you know, thinking back, I think on the surface I might have placed a little bit lower, but if I had like sat down and thought about it like we asked people to do, I probably would have placed it higher, because I think in the opening episodes there's so much excitement around the challenges where you're hoping Matt Singh's going to pull out a win, and then when they don't, for me it was kind of a letdown at the tribal councils. Like, I didn't really care at that point. I think my interest in the episodes lasted up through Matt Singh losing, but then I think it definitely did pick up post-merge once things got mixed up. And we had the intentional Matt Singh concept fall out of this episode.
Yeah, good concept. All right, so let's get to our top seven seasons to go.
Okay, here we are at number seven, Borneo, season one.
Borneo, that's interesting. Okay, I had Borneo at number five in my rankings, but you guys have it here at seven. Josh, the complaint that a lot of people are going to have is that it wasn't that very predictable. It is the original Pagonging. Shouldn't it be lower?
It should be lower because it was the first Pagonging, which was the first season of Survivor.
I think that's probably the complaint from some people.
I guess I'm sure some people, and I think that it's almost like a different show. You know, no season of Survivor just looks and feels as different as Borneo. You know, you go back and you look at Borneo now. If you're somebody who got into Survivor with one of these recent seasons and you haven't gone back and you haven't watched stuff, if you look at the first season of Survivor, it will feel like you are watching a different show. And it was, you know, it was the show in its infancy. It was the show figuring out what the show is. It's you know, these people learning what Survivor is on the fly. Many of them do not figure it out. Arguably, one of them does. I think that there are a few others who are very clever out there as well. But we're not here without Survivor Borneo. The same argument for Australia. I mean, I'm a Survivor 2 man. You know, that was my first season, but Borneo was the first for so many people, and it's the reason we're all here. And I think just out of respect, you got to give Borneo at the very least a top 15 spot. No problem with seeing it at seven. I know that there's a lot of people who would very firmly hold on to Borneo got to be number one. I'm not one of those people, but I think that you got to have it pretty high up just for legacy. And it's a fun season to go back and watch. You know, it's not what you would expect. It's great stuff. It's, you know, I'm happy to see it here. I don't know that I would have had it any higher, but a top 10 without Borneo, I do think would be a funky thing.
Now, I saw 153 people had placed this first. And if you just ranked the seasons based on how many first place votes it got, it would have placed a little bit higher. It actually would have come in fifth place.
So I saw one of the comments in the chat room was, how does Rob have Australia at number 22 and Borneo at number 5? And I just feel like that in Borneo, there are less times where you exactly know what's going to happen, especially, you know, take the results a little bit out of it. I mean, I think that there's more suspense as to what's going to happen after, you know, once you get to the merge, you don't really know what's going to happen. And then coming out of that, what's going to happen. I think that the characters overall are better. I think there's less duds in the Borneo cast, and there's almost none in the Borneo cast in my mind. And I just think that the Australia season, as you mentioned, with the 42 days, drags on and on and on. And I think that there's a lot of excitement coming down the stretch with Borneo in terms of Kelly and is she with them? Let's get rid of her. She keeps winning immunities. And where Colby is winning immunity down the stretch, it's not like that there's a threat that Colby is going to be voted out. So I think that there's some excitement there. Plus, the Borneo finale, I think, holds up as still one of the best finales of the entire series.
And on a hard idol, bro.
Yeah. And of course, the final tribal council is amazing. And I think that there is, for me, maybe that same nostalgia that you have in terms of the second season. I certainly have with the first season. I mean, if you're doing a rewatch of season one and season two, I think that the nostalgia, while it's there, I think it begins to sort of wane as you're getting into episodes 20 through 30 of the series, as opposed to, you know, when you're going back and watching the first 13 episodes of the show. So I think that's where the difference is. In fairness, I'm probably a couple spots too low. I don't know if I need to move it up a ton in my rankings, but if I was really going to go through again, I really went over 10 through 1 a lot more with a fine tooth comb than I did say, you know, 10 through 25 in my rankings.
Yeah. I just, when you put Caramoan at 16 and Australia at 22, you're going to have a problem.
I'm really trying to come at this from a enjoyment. If you were going to go watch those 13 or 14 hours of television, I think that there is, you know, higher highs, I think, in, you know, I'm trying to separate the emotion from it.
The emotion's the whole point.
I think that's a good point, though. Like, if you had to invest your time in one season to go back and watch, I'd be a lot more likely to go back and watch Borneo. So just for the reasons Rob said, and that you said, Josh, is that it's not quite exactly what you remember it as if you go back and watch it.
Yeah. And I don't mean I'm trying to take emotion out of it. Like, certainly, like in Caramoan, like Dawn having to take her teeth out is a major emotional moment. But I'm trying to take the not go super heavy on nostalgia. I'm trying not to use that as one of the criteria in my rankings.
Fair enough.
Okay. Let's take one question from Andrew. Andrew says, Bore, Boreneo, so high is 100% nostalgia and 0% actually watching that slog of a season. I disagree. Uh-huh. I watched it last summer and I was thoroughly entertained.
It was fun. I liked it. I had a good time.
Yeah. And then also, this is from a Shepherd 6 who says, way too high. Rudy should have won. Yeah. I should have won the Borneo. And, you know, if any of my buddies find out that I ranked it too low, then they're going to hear from them.
Yeah, that Borneo is getting no bargains.
They ain't getting no bargains at number 7.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Number 6.
Number 6, we have season 15, China.
China at 6. Damn. Okay, this is a little high for me, China. I had it at number 11 in my rankings. I think China is really good, really strong pre-merge. I think that the post-merge is exciting, but I think that you start to get to, once you get past the final 6, I think it's sort of a pretty cut and dry as you head towards the end. And again, Todd, really good in Final Tribal Council, but I think that, you know, from final 6 on, I think it's a little slow.
You're just mad at Custodian Denise.
Well, I think that there's some very poor play from Lunch Lady / Custodian Denise, but I think that overall, I don't think it's the most exciting home stretch of a season.
Really amazing cast.
Yeah.
China's cast is terrific.
Yeah. I think it's a really, really strong cast. Very few duds, only a 16 person cast there in China. So, it's a really iconic location, very enjoyable to watch. Of course, PG will return tomorrow night. And I think that overall, lots of stuff to like in Survivor China. You guys have it at number 6. A little high for me, but I'm not way off.
Kurt, how high is it for you?
I would have had it top 10. I don't think I would have had it necessarily top 5. I think it's just, would you say this is the first season where a superfan won?
Ooh. Maybe.
I was just kind of going through the list I think that might be part of the appeal of why it would be in the top 10 for me is it's a little bit of a, it's, you know, somebody who is like so familiar with the game ends up winning it. I think that's why it's definitely for me belongs in the top 10.
Kurt, how many people had this at number 1?
83
people at number 1 overall.
Yeah. Okay. So again, Borneo, more people had Borneo at number 1. And if you look at the rest of like the people who had it in their top 10, it ends up outweighing Borneo. So bumps it a little bit higher.
All right. Yeah. So
I can't imagine there was a lot of like low rankings for China. You know, like I think that we just heard some comments that were Borneo is way too high. Borneo. I don't think that you're hearing that about China. I don't think that there are a lot of people who are putting China down in like the bottom 15 even.
Yeah.
Maybe bottom 15, but I doubt that you're seeing too much China bottom 20.
Consistent rankings.
So I think that's going to boost China up a little bit.
Okay. I'm a little surprised. Right. I'm a little surprised to see it this high, but I totally understand why people are into it. Let's take some charts.
I think it's a great winner, great cast, amazing location, you know, totally unique season of Survivor in that regard. And we're at that point in season 15 where we're starting to move away from that. I often say I think that like Token Chains is one of the final classic seasons of Survivor, and China is in that mix as well. 16 contestants after we've just been through a period of 20 contestants. I think that there's a lot that's very refreshing about China. It's totally unlike any other season of the show. I do love that season. I think 6 is probably high for me as well, But I'm not going to be mad at it. I think it's good. I think it's good to have it in the top 10.
Okay. Couple of China comments. This is from Mark D. China made my top 15, but not my top 10. It's a solid season. I think that's probably a lot of people probably, everybody has it as a solid season. And then also Shepherd 6, love China. I'm with you, Josh. Love me some PG.
Oh, yeah. Okay. PG law.
Okay. PG. Love
Call
PG.
Me.
All right. Top,
Call me.
Top 5, baby. Here we go.
Top 5. At number 5, you have Season 6, The Amazon.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. Amazon, a little bit of a top 5, baby, for Survivor. Amazon, I have it at number 7 in my own rankings. I had said coming in that I thought that was going to be probably the hardest season to rank for me because I certainly am so close to it. So it's definitely hard to come up with an objective opinion on it. I do think that a 5 is probably a little too high for it. I think that there are, just to use my own criteria of in terms of episodes that are probably tough to get through. I think there's a couple episodes I always say with Survivor Amazon that I think not a ton going on. Certainly the second episode, the fourth episode, I think is also a little bit of a drag. It's very exciting post-merge, I think, admittedly, except for the Dave Johnson boot, I think is a little bit cut and dry. But once you get down to Final 9, it's pretty exciting all along the way. And then your mileage may vary on Final 2.
I think that was a very fair assessment of Survivor the Amazon.
Yeah.
I applaud your objectivity, and your objectivity is enough where you can give credit to yourself and credit to the season. It's an exciting season. We had seen nothing like it at that point in the show. The way that you were playing the game and the way that people were getting voted out, it was very different from what we were seeing. Very fun cast. The Battle of the Sexes is maybe a little dated at this point. Unfortunately, maybe not. But you know, there's some very interesting things that are happening there. I do love this season. I think it's great. I do think top 5 is a little high for me as well, but I think it's a top 10 season for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that you bring up that the datedness of the Battle of the Sexes. I do agree. I think that there is certainly some dated moments to that.
There's some things you would take back, right?
Certainly things that I would take back. I think there's things that probably a lot of people would take back. I mean, could you imagine the reception now in 2015 if, say, hypothetically, one of the Survivor women in Survivor 31 said to Jeff Probst, "I'll get naked for chocolate and peanut butter," and then he complied with that request? I think people would be killing Jeff Probst on Twitter and calling him all sorts of names for giving women refreshments to take their clothes off.
Yeah, maybe a bad call.
I mean, but nobody in 2003 was saying, again, the world changes as we go along. But I think that's an interesting, I thought of that a couple of weeks ago. I said, I bet Jeff would be getting a lot of hot water if he did that today.
You guys got away with some stuff.
Yeah. So certainly there, I think that there is definitely a nostalgia factor for a lot of people. But definitely some exciting moments. Again, I think 5 is probably a little too high. I can't begrudge you if you want it in the top 10. I think that 5 might be, in terms of like, you know, pound for pound, episode for episode, I think there might be a couple episodes along the way. Not amazing. But let's go to Gabe, who says, Amazon brought us one of the best players of all time, Mateo. That's right.
Yeah, Mateo's really good.
So there you go, Mateo. Kurt,
Mandarin Chinese.
Any fond Amazon feelings?
I didn't really care for it.
You didn't care for it.
I'm kidding. No, it was enjoyable. I really, really liked it. It would have been in my top 5.
Again, I think it's also one of these seasons that is helped by it is coming on the heels of what you guys ranked as your 28th favorite season. So I think coming off of that, I think that it also had a soft landing spot.
The reason I liked it, and Josh kind of alluded to it earlier, is that the tribal kind of alignment is very fluid post-merge. It's like it's not so cut and dry. In Marquesas, you had, you know, one group, you know, two people switch sides, so to speak. But here, it's like it seems like things were constantly shifting. And I think that's what made it exciting. And just to know, this is the only season that did not get a 30th ranking. This is the only season that nobody placed in last place.
Wow. Well, I'm very excited to hear how many last place rankings these top 4 got. Because I think that this is what I believe we've arrived at a consensus top 4 in our polling. Kurt, I'm interested to know, is there a gap between 5 and 4 of a sizable note?
Yeah, well, Not really. When you look at how everything averaged out, the fifth place, without getting too deep in the numbers, the fifth ranked season had an average ranking of 8.33, whereas the fourth place one had an average ranking of 7.53. So they were actually pretty close. Not a huge gap. You had a huge gap in first place votes, but overall, how it averaged out, it wasn't a huge gap.
Okay, here we go. So our top four seasons in chronological order, here's what's left. In numerical order only, it's in the order they came out. Pearl Islands, Micronesia, Heroes versus Villains, Kageyan. Josh, do you hazard a guess as to how the crowd ranked them?
No, I think that this is going to be fun. I hear what you're saying, consensus top four. I don't know that I would put Micronesia in that category, but maybe I'm wrong. I know that there's been a long reign of Micronesia thought of as one of the elite seasons of Survivor. I feel like there's a vocal minority of people who disagree with that. We'll see. I would bet that that's going to be number four, but then it could be number one. I think that you can make a case for any one of these being in the top spot. So I'm excited to see how this one shakes out. I think that with Kageyan, Heroes, Villains, and Pearl Islands, you're probably looking at my objective top three.
All right. Here we go, Kurt. What do you got for us? Number four.
Number four, give the trophy to Josh. It is Micronesia, season 16.
Wow. Okay. Micronesia, number 16. At number four in the rankings. I had it at number two.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of people who have it as, you know, best or second best. Obviously number four is nothing to stick your nose up at. That's very, very, very high up on this thing. But I do think that there was a period of time where Micronesia was considered to be, cream of the crop. I still think it's a great season. It's got a ridiculous cast. Even the fans, I'm not a huge fans versus favorites format type of guy, but there's so many funny people in there. There's Francisca, there's Eric giving away the immunity idol. There's the whole Black Widow Alliance. Parvati plays a very fun game. All of those, the women in that alliance, they're all great. It's a great Ceree season. It's great Penner stuff while Penner's still in there. Gotta love some Chet. Who doesn't love some Chet?
Yeah. I think it's the season that probably the worst part of the season is post-swap pre-merge.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the most boring section of the season where you have a couple of votes there between the Chet Tracy vote-offs are kind of mundane. And then the Amy vote-off is certainly interesting and sets things into motion where we get into the merge. And after the merge, I don't think there's a bad episode in the bunch.
Yeah. No, it's a good season. It is. And I think even those post-swap episodes you're talking about, I think that there's really fun stuff there, too. Joel's brief reign of terror. You know, there's really good stuff in basically every moment of this season.
Okay. Kurt, any strong thoughts on Micronesia?
You know, it's one of those things where if I took a step back and look at the whole thing, I probably would have had it ranked somewhere in 11 to 15. But as I hear you guys talk, because it's not fresh in my mind, as I hear you guys talk about it, then I go back to the whole, it's a stick. I mean, that whole scenario with Jason Sisko and Eliza and the fake idol was like one of my favorite moments in the entire run of the show.
Yeah.
And so when I think about the details of it, there was a lot to enjoy there. But for some reason, just for me, when I look at the thing as a whole, nothing sticks out unless I force myself to dive deep. So I probably would have had it like 11 or so.
By the way, did you see that promo for tomorrow night's Survivor where Steven Fishback was with a memorable stick?
Yeah, he's battling a stick.
Maybe it was an immunity idol.
Get wood, get wood.
So there we go. There's number four. So up to our top three, baby. So we've got in let me take a couple of Micronesia comments. Scott is telling me, film TV nerd. I agree with Josh. Micronesia is overrated. In my opinion, it was 15th. I think it's kind of a boring knowing that the favorites would just cream out the fans.
Wow. They're going to cream them out.
They're going to cream them out.
That's gross.
Okay. Unicorn Chicken. Micronesia is an incredible season. Kathy, Chet, Tracy are the best group of underdogs of all time. I mean, you got a lot of really great and memorable boots. I mean, I think that the Eliza boot is kind of mundane, but then you start getting into everything that's going on with all those boots that come after. You got Ozzy Blind.
But the Eliza boot is such good.
Yeah, well, you have the stick stuff.
It's so funny.
That'll get you through it.
Yeah.
But yeah, between, you know, between Ozzy, between Siska, and then, you know, the James Medivac is sort of like a mercy boot because it skips a step in the pagonging. And you have, Alexis going out, and you have, you have an idol play in there, and you have Eric
and they do a really clever thing where they don't even show you Amanda finding the idol. They don't really do that very often. It's that and like the Gary Hogaboom moment, and that's pretty much it that I can think of. It's good editing on that. There's a lot of really exciting post-merge episodes. It's crazy. It's a crazy post-merge for sure.
Really good run. Kurt, three seasons are left. What is number three in the rankings?
Oh, number three in the rankings. We needed this. It's season 28, Kagayan.
Okay, you guys have it at number three. I had it at number four, and happy to hear Tony and Kagayan got his due.
Definitely.
It's huge. Yeah. I needed this. Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Yes. Okay. There you go, Tony. Oh. Yes, you did it. Number three in your rankings. Number four in mine. And very, really great season. Josh and I just watched this within the last month, and really holds up on the rewatch.
It's so good. It really is. And it's one of those things where I wonder: is this a season that will crawl further up on the food chain as time goes on? We're already so close to it, and it's a top three baby. That's pretty amazing. This cast, top to bottom, is so good. So good that four of them are coming back for 31. And you could make an argument for so many more of them that you would want to see again. It's such a good season. Such a weird, weird win from Tony. That's not the guy you would think could win this thing, but everything he does, he throws so much at the wall and enough of it sticks that he's able to pull it out. It is a huge season. I think it is definitively the best season of the modern era. I think it'd be hard to argue that.
It's a season also that has not too many episodes that you would say are boring at all. I mean, you have couple of the early boots are amazing. Then you have, I would say probably the worst boot from the pre-merge is probably Alexis. And also in that episode, I think that's where Lindsay goes home. And that's sort of a mercy pagonging that she quits in the beginning of an episode. And then you have the Alexis boot, which is kind of not super memorable, but then you get into the merge and you have everything that goes on with Cass. And even though Tony's alliance really controls things all the way down, he switches every other vote just to keep it interesting. Going down to the final four is really, really great. You have all the stuff with Tony and Wu in the final two. It's a great, great season of the show.
Yeah. No, it's I can see an argument for it being number one. It's such a good season of Survivor. And I think that the only reason I would stop short of saying it has to be number one is because the two on the board, you could say the same exact thing about the two that are still left.
Yeah. So it's really exciting. Also, as much as we love Bryce, I think that the Bryce boot episode is not super exciting.
Yeah.
Great premiere, though. Great 2-hour premiere with everything that's going on in that episode. All right, here we go.
You had nine last place votes for this one.
Nine last place? Who's ranking Kagayan last out of 30 seasons?
Reveal yourself.
Yes. We know you're listening.
Unless somebody's trying to game the system that they really want, whatever their number one is. It's like, oh, I don't want Kagayan to overpass it. Let me put the Kagayan at zero. All the way at the bottom.
This is the Survivor China contingent.
The Survivor China contingent. Okay. All right. So this is from Young to Peaceful. Except Amazon Pearl Islands, Micronesia, Heroes vs. Villains, Kagayan are criminally overrated.
Wow. We found our number nine.
Yeah. Come on. Can't be that criminally overrated. It's a great season. So now we're down to two. And, Scott, something. We've got two more comments. Okay, so this is from Gabe, who says, love the season, even got family to watch some of it, and Tony proved that a character can also be a good player and win. Team TV. He lived up to his name.
TV. Yeah, first of his name.
Yeah. And then also, this is from Film TV Nerd. My only complaint about Kagayan is that I want more Bryce, and I want him back. Okay, we all do.
Ah! Love Bryce, purple pants. You're getting the purple pants on the podcast at some point this season, right?
Yes, of course, of course.
Obviously. Got him
10 times on. Yeah. Jaden says, would Kagayan still have been number three if Tony hadn't won, Josh?
I don't know. It's probably not. I think that Tony had
if
to win.
If Wu beats Cass in the end, is it tough?
Yeah, I think that that's not the ending you're looking for.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's... I think it's a different story. I think we're being told a different story if Wu is the winner of this season. I think Tony winning is an enormous part of why this season is so fantastic. I don't even think, as much as I love the young lad, I don't think that if Spencer won this season, I don't think that would be it would be the season it was. I think Cass winning may have been really interesting.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine how that happened.
Any issue with Tyler Perry Idol?
I think that the Tyler Perry Idol is something that a lot of people were worried about. I don't think that they were, you know, worried for the wrong reasons. I think that it was right to be worried about that thing. I think it was a best case scenario. It didn't have to get played. Tony was doing other things that completely were separate from the Tyler Perry Idol. I think that the way that the Tyler Perry Idol was played was really more about the threat of what this special idol could be as opposed to what it actually is capable of. So I don't take too much issue with it. Let's not do that again.
Kurt, what's your read on Kagyan?
Really enjoyed it. Again, those ones where the post-merge alliances seem very fluid. And even though you kind of knew where the alliances were, you didn't really know where Tony's head was at. So the thing where it just kind of keeps you guessing, I enjoy those seasons more. So this was definitely a top five.
Very fun. Very fun. I think this was my most fun season to podcast about since I started RHAP. So high praise from me for Survivor Kagyan. And now we're down to two. In chronological order, they are Pearl Islands and Heroes versus Villains. Josh, what do you think the fans voted for?
Well, can I predict where you have them?
Sure.
You've got Pearl Islands 3 and Heroes Villains 1.
Okay, and what do you predict that the fans voted?
I'm going to say I think Heroes Villains is going to take it. I think it's going to take it, but I would not be surprised at all if Pearl Islands does. But I'll put my money on Heroes Villains.
Okay. Kurt.
Yes.
You want to tell? Let's. You know, I feel like then we don't give a proper eulogy or memorial to the thing if we do it where one is first and it's sort of anticlimactic to go back. So why don't you tell us number two?
At number two, we have season 7, Pearl Islands.
Yeah. So. All right. Yeah, and that is Josh. He knows me so well that I did have it at number 3. In my rankings.
My work spouse. I know you inside and out.
Yes, that's right. And so here we go. So there's number two in your rankings is Survivor Pearl Islands. What a great season of the show. Andrew Savage will return to Survivor tomorrow night. And Josh, what could you say about Survivor Pearl Islands?
Well, what can you say about Andrew Savage? He's the person you're rooting for in Survivor Second Chance,
yeah, especially
right, Rob?
After Steven is getting a little lippy on Twitter.
A little lippy.
Root for Survivor Savage.
Yeah, what can you say about Pearl Islands? I think it's a lot of the things that you love about a season like yours, Rob, a season like Amazon where things were topsy-turvy. It's a very turbulent season on Pearl Islands. It's unpredictable. Big characters. Johnny Fairplay, the dead grandmother lie. It speaks for itself. Rupert, a legend. This was before Rupert fatigue. I think he goes out just at the right time that season. You've got Sandra Diaz-Twine. Sandra Diaz-Twine winning both of these top two seasons, I think, is no coincidence. She's spectacular television. I think that her legend has only grown with the fact that she's able to win the second title in Heroes versus Villains. There's you could go on forever. We could do a 2-hour podcast on why Pearl Islands is fantastic.
Gosh, you said that you were going to mention me as to one of the reasons why this was such a great season.
I'm so sorry, Lil. I know. I had worked that out with her before this podcast. I told her I'd give her a shout out. I screwed up.
Kurt, that I feel like we heard from Andrew Savage a lot in the pregame of Survivor Cambodia that so many people hated the Outcast twist. People were up in arms about the Outcast twist, but this seems to be one of the most beloved seasons of all time. Can you reconcile those two things?
No, I can't actually. I mean, I think it was, I don't know, the people who love to hate on Sandra will, you know, always go fall back on that as like the reason there's an asterisk next to her name. But I think overall, it's something that makes the season interesting. I mean, it was a solid season.
Josh, can you speak to that? Is that overblown that so many people hate the Outcast twist?
I think there were people who were bummed about it at the time. I think it was a weird out of left field type of thing. I don't remember if it was outrage at the time. I know I thought it was kind of funky. I think over the years, there's more appreciation for the fact that it's really in line with the theme of the season. You know, it's the theme of the season is piracy and anything goes, lie, cheat, and steal. So why can't Survivor lie, cheat, and steal from you?
Wow. It's also the season. It's also a season where you have probably the biggest hero that the game had seen to that time, at least to us in the moment in Rupert, and the biggest villain, the person that embraced being the villain the most in Johnny Fairplay. So you have those two super interesting polar opposites in a season of the show. And also the theme of the show that Josh mentioned, the piracy theme. There has not been another season where the theme fit what was going on as well as it did in Pearl Islands. The cast that they had was perfect. The theme was perfect. Everything really just was on point there in Pearl Islands. Not one really terrible episode along the way. I think if you were probably going to say, what's the worst episode of the season? I think it's probably the episode 5. Michelle boot. I think that's probably the Michelle Tesoro boot in episode 5. I think it's probably the worst episode of the season.
You love Michelle.
I loved her, but I think that that's kind of a boring episode.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I think you're right about the theme with the contestants fitting the theme. I don't think that anything even comes close to it. I think the closest actually probably would be China. And I think that that could be a big part of the reason why China is as high up as it is. But I think really nothing comes close to just the theme is so strong and it was cast so well for it. And the twists work really well that I think the Outcast twist would not work on just any season. But on this season, I think you can accept it. And for all the other strengths, I think it just elevates this season so much.
All right. Well, let's shift gears and talk about the number one season on your list. And that would be the great Survivor Heroes versus Villains. And Josh, you brought up an interesting point about Sandra winning the two seasons. Wow. Back to the two top seasons.
Yeah.
What does that speak to about Sandra as a either player or a TV personality?
I don't know. I think that, you know, you touched on this earlier. You talked about how people like the unpredictable. People like it when things don't play out the way that you expect it to. You really think Sandra Diaz-Twine is going to win a second time? No chance. But I don't know about that. Turns out she does. And it's really unexpected. And I think that the way that that season plays out is just, it's a big surprise that that's the way it goes. I think both times that I think you look at that lineup of contestants, you don't pick Sandra to be the winner very often. I think more times than not, you think that she's probably going home fairly early. And the fact that she manages to get to the end the way she gets to the end is super entertaining. And I think that that is a big piece of why these two seasons are as loved as they are. But I think that there's tons of other stuff about these seasons as well. I think Sandra just so happens to be the great winner of the two great seasons of Survivor.
In terms of Sandra being a part of both of these two beloved seasons, do you think that her type of gameplay where her vote is often up to grabs leads to a very unpredictable and highly volatile post-merge game? And do you think that there is some reason why Sandra is a part of these two very interesting post-merge seasons?
Yeah, I think there's that. I think that's really interesting. This idea of, you know, a lot of times Survivor is played in the trenches with your alliances. You know, you find your people, you stick to them, you battle the other alliance, you whittle each other down. Whoever wins the numbers war goes on to be the final five. In the two seasons that Sandra's a part of, you now have this total free agent. You have this agent of chaos, this mercenary, this sellsword. My vote's for sale as long as you're not shooting at me. And I do think that that creates an energy shift. I think that's a really interesting observation.
And she's also there with two very villainous characters that she does not get along with in Russell Hance and Johnny Fairplay, Kurt.
Yeah.
True. And I think it's interesting. Whenever we talk about best players of all time, you always have, there's a Rob contingent and there's a Sandra contingent. You also have, you know, Parvati as well. But it's interesting that, you know, like Josh pointed out, top two seasons, Sandra wins. Season 30 was Boston Rob's. In terms of last place.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think it speaks to the very, very big differences in the two ways those two people play. You know, Rob plays a very, you know, he plays a very disciplined game. He plays a commanding game, a dominating game. He wants total control. And Sandra really just survives. She's a survivor. She really is. You know, she dodges the bullets. She's like Neo. It's a totally polar opposite way from the way that Rob plays. And there's a reason why I think that a lot of people don't think that Sandra is. There's a lot of people who don't think that Sandra is a terrific player. I think that those people are very much out there. They might be listening to this right now. But I think that the way that she plays is probably, I don't know, I think it lends to a more dynamic story than if you get Boston Rob in power, things are going to play out the way that the guy in power wants it to play out. And I think with Sandra, it becomes more chaotic.
I think that was an interesting point you brought up about how she dodges the bullets like Neo. I almost feel like that she doesn't necessarily dodge the bullets, but people never shoot the gun at her. She makes you not think she's the like worthy of your bullets.
Right. I think that that's absolutely a part of her game is that, you know, both times she played, it was you're not worthy of taking a being, you know, shot at. Like, it's just what's the point? But I think, I don't know, I would love to see Sandra Diaz Twine 3.0. I would love to see what that looks like.
I hope so.
I would imagine people are taking shots at her, but maybe not.
You never know. Blade Blur X, Heroes vs. Villains was everything I wanted All-Stars to be: unpredictable, dynamic, great personalities, challenge. But one of the best parts about it was that the people should credit more. It was the genesis of RHAP.
Mm.
Yes. Is that why people voted it the best season of all time? Because it was the season that launched RHAP?
Could be. Well, that's interesting. It's interesting, if you look at number of first place votes, Pearl Islands had 347 first place votes. Heroes versus Villains, 1,118. So almost quadruple the number of votes were between second and first place.
Well, in terms of Heroes versus Villains, just as a season, it's another season that is jam-packed. You have all of these great players that are in there. I'm not sure if there is a bad episode along the way. I think that probably maybe the most boring episode. I mean, there's a little bit of a begonging, but it's definitely interesting in the post-merge. Maybe like the Courtney Boot episode might be the worst episode of the season, or was the least going on. But in hindsight, that's a really interesting vote because Sandra could have been voted off at that point in time, but instead it's Courtney.
One thing that'd be interesting to look at maybe at your next Jason Somerville podcast, Rob, would be if you could like apply a number to say how much of a pagonging a season has based on how many times people vote with their original tribe. It'd be interesting if you could see, does this top 30 ranking, is it impacted by how little pagonging takes place? So if you could actually, you know, apply that number, so like if it's a pure pagonging, does it potentially fall lower on the spectrum? Because you've got Heroes versus Villains at one, you've got Redemption Island at three. Borneo is obviously would stick out at number seven as going against that theory. But I wonder if the trend would still hold.
Yeah. And we'll have to look into pagonging factor as a stat. Let's see if we have any other questions. This is from Shepherd Six. Besides Sandra winning the game, this season is extremely overrated. Sorry, guys. Hashtag Africa. Oh, man.
Thumbs down. Boo.
Yeah.
Really. Is that hashtag Africa?
Heroes Villains is everything you want out of Survivor. It's every Survivor you love, or many of the Survivors you love, and a lot of them that you love to hate, going to war with each other, playing a really aggressive game, having really great character moments, legacies getting destroyed, legacies getting built up. And I think that, you know, the thing about this versus All-Stars is All-Stars was so personal. Friendships were shattered. You don't really have too much of that in Heroes Villains, I don't think. And I feel like there's a little bit more of a, we're here to play a game. There's a little bit more of a whimsical attitude, but they're still taking it so seriously in Heroes Villains that I think is missing in a season like All-Stars. I hope certainly that Cambodia is a lot closer to Heroes Villains than it is to All-Stars. I'm sure I'm not alone in that sentiment.
I hope nobody's friends after.
Well, you and
Fishback. And then everybody can know what it feels like to be me and have no friends.
You and Fishback might not be.
Yeah.
At this rate.
Keeps talking crap about me. Michael wants to know, I don't care what anybody says, Sandra deserves that two-time winner title. Well, I don't think anybody's trying to take it away from her.
Nah. I bet Russell would try and buy it.
I'll buy it.
Yeah.
It loses 10% once you leave the finale.
Yeah.
All right. And last question. This is from Gabe. I believe that Heroes vs. Villains, best characters and players, potluck, and it brought some of the most what-the-hell moves in the history books for Survivor. Yeah, between the Tyson thing, the JT thing. It was not a great season for the Token Jeans players. Coach sure. As well, if you want to add that in. All right. So that is our 30 season rankings. And really excited. You guys did a great job.
Oh, it was fun.
Yeah. I don't think there's any real like WTF spots on here. I hope that these rankings give a hold a little water with people.
Why are you hoping that?
Why? You don't think they will?
There's always. I think you're going to hear more negative feedback than positive, but that's what we tend to get.
Josh, when we look about this up on places like Survivor Reddit, what's the headline here on these rankings, these 30 season rankings?
That you're a monster for how low you rate Australian Outback. No, I don't know what the headline is going to be. I don't think so. I think that this, to me, it, you know, there's really not a ton of outliers. The very end of this list, you know, 20, 28, 29, 30, even 27. I mean, all of that looks about what I would expect. And this top five looks about what I would expect. I feel like this is representative of how I view Survivor pretty closely. There's some areas where I disagree, majorly and minorly, but fewer and further between than I expected. I think it's pretty good. I think it's a pretty good list.
Yeah. All right. Well, good job to you guys. I really appreciate this. Very pumped up. This was a very nice appetizer for Survivor Cambodia. Coming tomorrow night, of course, Josh and I will be live at 9:45 p.m. Eastern. And then I will also be talking about the Big Brother finale at 12:30 a.m. Eastern time Thursday morning. So can't wait for that. First, a big round of virtual applause for the tabulator, Kurt Clark. Once again, you've done it, Kurt.
Kurt, that's amazing.
I just count things.
Yes. No, you did a fantastic job. I really liked how you made the poll and people could drag and drop. I didn't hear any complaints from people. This was too complicated. Very good.
Yeah, I was glad that it went as well as it did.
Yeah. So fantastic job that, Kurt. Really appreciate that. You have our gratitude. If you want to know more about any of these seasons, if this has piqued your curiosity on any of these 30 seasons that we talked about, of course, you can check them all out. Josh and I go into debate many of these topics that we talked about here tonight in the Evolution of Strategy, which you can check out at evolutionofstrategy.com. Over 300 hours of information there for you guys to check that out. And of course, chapter one, all about Borneo, is completely for free.
Yeah.
Looking for a hashtag. I asked the chat room what they were thinking about.
What did they say?
No consensus chat room pick on the hashtag. We had the niche mish niche.
I see Susan Appleby says hashtag Australia 22.
Okay. Well, that's two and two.
I like it.
Number two. Yeah. All right. Tell me. And if you think I'm dead wrong on that, we'd love to hear the constructive feedback.
Be nice.
Be nice. All right. Don't get me worked up already. It's the first day of the Survivor season tomorrow. I don't need this already.
You got to get fired up. Come on. It's good for you.
I need people getting chippy before the season even starts. I haven't even killed anybody yet.
I like it.
All right. So I'm very excited, Josh, to talk about it all on Survivor Know-It-Alls. Tomorrow night, enjoy the Survivor premiere. Josh, what do you got coming up for people to read tomorrow?
I've got some fun stuff. I have from the first day of the game, before the game really started up, I sat down with Jeff Probst and he gave me his prediction for the winner of the season. So I will be presenting that on parade.com tomorrow. That's on day one. So no spoilers.
Plenty,
good stuff.
Plenty of fodder that will get people worked up with Jeff's picks.
I'm sure. We did a little bit of a fantasy draft to see who goes further than who. That'll all be explained in the article. I made my winner pick there as well. So you can read that at parade.com tomorrow.
All right. There you go. Of course, you can follow Josh on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. Kurt Clark is at Kurt Clark. No wasted characters there.
No underscores.
There you go. None. I love it. All right. Everybody, thank you so much for participating in the poll. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to go through all of this and really pumped up to get into this. I've been waiting all summer to start talking about Survivor, and I can't wait. The first course coming up tomorrow, 90-minute premiere of Survivor Cambodia. Can't wait to talk about it with you tomorrow night here on Survivor Know-It-Alls. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.